The Linux Night Tech Show is on. Your link to the new Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open technology, and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Is that your final answer? That's looking pretty ranked there, the way you're looking at that beer, Dan.
You know, you really should play the open country thing first.
Yes, that makes sense.
Before you play this.
I would think so.
Do you think so? Nag, nag, nag.
Do you want me to restart it?
No.
You have to play the open country now.
We're going
to
play.
Now no one knows what that
is. We have a word
about
from our sponsors.
The Linux Link Tech Show is proudly sponsored by Open Country, providers of OCM, award-winning systems management software for the Linux Enterprise, and exclusive sponsors of the Webmin Project.
And there you have it.
That was Open Country.
You know, we got
our
some fine
sponsor,
whiskey.
Open Country.
You got some cheap beer. I got some box wine down there.
Excuse me.
I need some cheese to go with it.
And this particular show is something also like going to be sponsored by Chinese food and Black Velvet whiskey. Thank you very much.
And it's the last show we will ever be doing here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is Studio D's last show.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to have a Viking funeral for it, Dan?
No. We have a wonderful guest again tonight.
We've got our good friend Marcel Gagne on the line. Marcel, welcome.
Hey!
It's been a long time. How you been?
It's been a million years. Actually, it's been great. Thank you. Actually, well, I'm sort of just sticking my head up above the water right now because we moved on tonight, and of course, so I'm surrounded by boxes, and I'm amazed that actually everything is up and working as far as the electronics here. I had a little bit of trouble with my ISP getting things going, but we're here, so life is good.
That's a good thing.
Awesome.
Did you move far? Are you local? Or did you move far away?
Actually, it's a fairly good haul, actually, but about an hour and 15 minutes down the road. I was living in Mississauga, and I am now living in Waterloo. Waterloo, the tech capital of Canada.
All right.
It's like Silicon Valley North. Research in Motion, RIM is, and there are tons of tech companies here, but the University of Waterloo as well. The Perimeter Institute is here, and the Perimeter Institute, of course, is funded by the founder of RIM, or was set up by him anyway, and that's where they do advanced theoretical physics and so forth. It's like it's a cool town.
Well, good luck in the new house.
What prompted the move? I mean, was it job related, or you just said I got to be there?
What's this job thing people keep telling me about? No, sorry.
It was the chicks.
Actually, it was my son 2 years ago. My son was born just a little over 2 years ago. But when we found out that Sally was pregnant, we started talking about it at that point. We were actually living in Mississauga, but most of her family was... Sally had just started her MBA at York University. And we actually started talking about the idea of, moving back in this area because most of the relatives that we've got, that Sebastian might grow up with, cousins and so forth, are actually in this area. That's really what prompted the move more than anything.
That's cool. That's move back with a little family, you have someone to hang out with.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
It's good being back, and Waterloo is actually a great town. So.
Cool.
And nice to be back.
And you also got a book just came out, right? Moving to
I do.
Moving to Ubuntu?
Moving to Ubuntu Linux actually just came out.
Nice.
So I'm quite happy about that. I'm quite proud of it.
Is that subtitle Kiss the Brown Screen? Hello?
No, but that would have been funny. No, actually, it's not subtitled anything. It's just Moving to Ubuntu Linux, and it's been out, I guess, about 3 weeks now, 3.5 weeks or so, which means it'll be another week before it shows up here in Canada.
See,
it's a little bit slow for things to make it across the border.
Our favorite book hawkers around here are publisher people.
have failed to get us copies of your new book. So what we're just dying to know is if the first chapter is about changing that ass horrible brown screen to something better.
No, that's actually, I think, chapter 4 that talks about that.
We love Ubuntu. Don't get us wrong. We love it a lot. It's that brown has got to go, though.
Yeah, well, I'm not particularly fond of the brown screen either, so what can I say?
The dirt.
However, they gave me a nice brown Ubuntu cover for the book. So.
There you go. I thought it was a little red. I'm looking at the thing. It looks...
It's reddish-brown. It's probably more brownish than anything else. You know, that Ubuntu reddish-brown sort of thing happening.
And you're
sorry, go ahead.
Besides the book, you're also on Computer America every once in a while, and you're also on.
Yeah, I do that once a month, and I do a couple of shows every month on Call for Help. With Leo Laporte. Yeah.
Unfortunately, they took that off the air in the United States.
Yeah, I know. Oh, so yeah. The only way to get it now is to not that I condone such things, but can download it via BitTorrent Tracker, right?
And if you want to do that, just hit Marcel's server and,
I'm not suggesting that anyone would ever do anything like that, but I've been told that people can do that,
mm-hmm.
that there are Call for Help trackers out there so that you can download the episodes and watch them. And I've been told that people do that sort of thing. Again, not that I condone that personally. I also know that Google Video now allows... Google Video actually lets you now, so you can actually go to... video.google.com and actually watch the episodes there. You can also download them for 99¢, like in a high quality form. I don't know, to me seems a little bit weird, for something that I can just watch on television, but the funny thing is, I've seen very few of the shows, I guess I just don't watch television. But I'm out there trying to spread the word, get people to use Linux and open source applications, And they give me a forum for doing it. And Leo is actually very, very big on Linux and open source. I mean, he actually really enjoys having that stuff on the show. So,
You couldn't tell from his other shows.
Good point.
You couldn't tell from his other shows. He's really, really big on
Apple.
He's
Apple, man. He's so into Apple.
Well, he does. He loves Apple. But, it's sort of like Apple, Linux, and then, somewhere down the line there's Windows.
Can't blame the guy for that.
You work with what you like.
That's right.
Call for Help and your work on there. Has there been a lot? I've never listened to Call for Help and I've never watched it, so I'm ignorant about the show. And I'm thinking that it would be user submitted questions or user call ins. And do you get a lot of call ins? I mean, when your segment's up. What have the call-ins been like, or the questions? Have they been, pretty basic, or do they get pretty technical and advanced?
Sometimes they get fairly technical. I mean, it really does vary. But it is in advance. I mean, people will call the show and they'll say, hey, I have a question and I want to ask it. But it's not pre-staged or anything like that. I mean, the questions are answered live on the show. And I have been there from time to time where somebody has a Linux question of one, whatever it happens to be. And they will actually ask me to answer the question because I happen to be there for that particular show. To just do my segment, I'll actually answer the Linux questions as well.
How difficult is that to answer the questions right there on the spot? For you, I mean, how is it something you've gotten accustomed to, or...?
I've gotten pretty accustomed to it. I mean, it happens on the radio show as well. It's a little bit different on the TV show because you do really have that banter with the other person, namely on the set. So we will throw things back and forth and chat about things, and it does give you an opportunity to think about what you're going to say next, for instance. So I guess I've gotten used to it quite a bit. I'm actually quite comfortable doing the stuff on television. In fact, I enjoy it quite. I enjoy it a great deal, and when somebody throws something at me. On the show, the thing to do though, of course, is if you don't have an answer, if you don't know, you just say, "I don't know," But we'll look and then we'll put it up in the show notes, as an answer in the show notes if we can't answer it on the spot. The show is not live, but it is taped live, so you only really get one shot at it.
So you just say, "Well, hold on a minute," and this big long pause while you're scanning Linux questions or something, and then
no,
you come back.
It's, it's not quite that bad. For the most part, I generally have a pretty good idea, you know, how to answer the questions, like what people are looking for. I mean, there was a show where somebody called up and they find out what they, you know, what sort of distribution they could run on an older notebook. Well, I mean, I can, you know, I can answer that question off the top of my head. It's not that big a deal.
Mandriva, right?
Sorry. What's that, sorry?
Mandriva, right?
Mandriva, yeah.
Depends. Depends on how they define an older notebook.
Yeah.
As it turns out, the guy who called up said, well, I have their notebook. It's like a 1.8 gigahertz, you know, Pentium 4. Well, you know, that's only so old.
Yeah.
Won't run Vista.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, old notebook, that's like a, what, a 486? Right?
Vista
a
won't
Pentium
run on that, man.
To me. Anyway, you were saying, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, no, not at all. So generally speaking, the questions haven't been so weird that it isn't that I can answer off the top of my head, or you know, or that I can't make suggestions as to where they might find an answer if I don't have it right there and then. In the case of a notebook questions, you know, you can say, you know, go look at the Linux on Laptops notebook for our website, for instance. Or if they do have something that's a little bit more, you know, any modern distribution will pretty much fit the bill. While I was up there on one of the shows, I actually loaded up Kubuntu, because I had the disks with me. I loaded up Kubuntu on one of the new Mac notebooks just to see how that would run. So it's kind of fun. It's a little bit doing things live, and of course, even my segments, I mean, I know what I'm going to talk about beforehand. I've practiced it. I've gone over the software. I've tested it myself. But of course, when you're on the spot, things have a habit of happening, right?
Right.
So you've got to be able to think on your feet, and you have to be able to work around it if things aren't working 100%. And it usually helps to have more than one thing to talk about before you do the segment. Generally speaking, they run somewhere between 6 minutes, but you'd be amazed how quickly 6 or 8 minutes will go by when you're trying to do something like that, when you're actually trying to demonstrate something live on television.
We get the whole live demonstration stuff here, too. not quite
usually
on
usually when we're trying to set up for the show.
I mean, we would do the show, you know, as a video portion too, but we don't want to scare anybody, so
okay.
It's better if our fans just, you know, live in their ignorance for a while.
I heard some of your episodes on Computer America. It sounds like those guys are starting to warm up to you, Marcel.
it's sort of starting. Yes,
it's taken a while.
It's taken a while. It's a tough show to do because, frankly, I mean, there are guys who love Windows, and of course, their advertisers are, you know, Microsoft and companies that sell Microsoft software. So it's a tough thing to do on the show. It's in many ways it's a lot more difficult to do than the TV show because, you know, you have to wait for their commercial breaks, and of course they will have, you know, their own agenda, so to speak. And they're only so used to the idea. I mean, they know that there's an audience out there that wants to hear something about Linux, that wants to know about open source software. But it isn't their world. It's not the sort of thing that they're used to, and neither of them has really worked with it or played with it. So it can be a little bit tough sometimes, and I know that it's an uphill selling job, so to speak. But what it does do, and the reason that I keep doing the show, and the reason I'm happy to continue doing the show, is it is syndicated across 200, like on 200 different stations across the United States. And it's pretty cool to have an opportunity to talk about Linux and open source software to that kind of an audience, you know, who might not otherwise have the opportunity to find out about this sort of stuff.
It's tough, like Computer America, at least they're willing to give you some time to talk about Linux, where some of the other shows, they don't talk about Linux at all. Like, this is one show over here called the Kim Komando Show.
Yes, yes.
She never talks about Linux, zero.
Yeah, no, I've heard of the show. I personally haven't seen it. Somebody sent me a video clip from the Kim Komando Show, or not a video clip, rather, sorry, an audio. And that is the only thing I've ever seen on there. By the way, if somebody is curious and they want to check it out, there are a handful of episodes. If you go to video.google.com, if you have to check some of these out and watch some of them, you go just go to video.google.com and in quotes, make sure you put it in quotes, call for help, call space for space help in double quotes, space cell. and you'll see some of the episodes. They've got 12 episodes on video.google now. I've done about 35 of these episodes, but there are 12 of them sitting on video.google. So you can check them out, and you can see you know, what happens when you talk Linux on these shows.
You know, it's fun. Before we get too far, because I got questions I want to ask you, but we have somebody on the RFC who wanted to know what was the topic of the last, your topic on the last call for help that you were on. What was it about, and what episode was that?
What was the last episode that I did?
Yeah, and what was the topic about?
That's what I'm trying to remember. Actually, I did one. But there were two episodes. I did one that was actually, strangely enough, moving to Ubuntu. It was a moving to Ubuntu Linux, because the book had just come out, and Leo actually had done the did the foreword for my book. So the foreword is actually written by Leo. But so we talked about Call for Help, and we also talked Democracy. Are you familiar with Democracy, Internet Video Player?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so that's what I did. I did a demonstration of Democracy. So those were the last two episodes that I taped on Call for Help. I actually remember. Oh, if you actually go to my website, www.marcelgagne.com, and you scroll down the list on the left-hand side, you'll see under you'll see the Call for Help there, and it says episode list. It's on episode list. You'll see quite a few now. It's not 100% up to date, but I've got like about 35 different episodes there, and what I covered and on and that sort of thing. So you can certainly find out what a lot of them were by going to the website.
Cool. Now, you mentioned before that when you're doing the show over there, that it's not live, that it's pre-recorded, but I just have like a really stupid question. If it's a pre-recorded show, how do people know to call in and ask you questions? Because you said...
Oh, they book it ahead of time. They book it ahead of time. So what you'll do is like... And if somebody has a Linux question... What they'll say is, Marcel is going to be in on this day. So there are 5 days that they tape the show. They tape 20 episodes over the course of a week, okay? And they'll say, Marcel is going to be on the show. He's going to be doing Linux segments on this particular date. He's going to be doing a couple of shows this day. Would you like to have your question answered by Marcel? So that's what will happen under those circumstances. If I'm not taping and there isn't an opportunity for it, Leo will take the Linux questions. But often they try to line them up so that, you know, I'm there when that happens.
Okay.
It actually works out. It sounds a little bit strange, but the calls are taped live. Everything that happens on the show is taped live. But, you know, it is recorded, so it's one of those things, you know, taped before a live audience. Well, right. It's the same thing, except we don't have an audience.
Let me ask you a question here.
Ask me anything.
There has been a little bit back and forth on our forums on this topic since you work with a lot with Leo, who is a big Apple fan, and you know we're looking at the up and coming Vista coming out, and there seems to be a lot of what Apple OS X and what Vista are promoting as new features to their operating system have existed in the Linux and BSDs for quite some time. Virtual desktops,
yes.
Desktop search.
Shell.
Right. And one of the things that you know I'm looking at and I'm saying to people who don't use Linux or any of the BSDs, this is all new and appears innovative. Do you think that these features being implemented in these other operating systems are going to, in a sense, later on down the line, as they accommodate more of these features that we're accustomed to, make moving to Linux or FreeBSD less appealing?
I don't think so. I actually don't. I mean, the fact of the matter is Linux and even Apple, of course, Apple these days is running on a Unix kernel, but Linux has been continuing to grow in popularity. Its market share, even on the desktops, increase. I know it's not as exciting as I'd like it to be, or as any of us would like it to be. In fact, I'm giving a keynote address on that very topic at the 5th annual Free and Open Source Software Symposium that's happening at the end of October at Seneca College, York University, Toronto. I'm giving a keynote address on that very topic, the selling of Linux and open source. Why do we suck so much at it? But I actually don't think those features, you know, that are being marketed in Vista are necessarily a bad thing. I remember going to a, just to give you an idea, this is a few years ago now, but I remember going to a presentation running my computer consulting company, and I wanted to see what was coming up in, you know, the next version of Windows. And I don't remember what it was at the time, NT or something like that. And they were pushing MIME-encoded emails and making it sound like they invented it. It's like, wow, you can do MIME attachments in email now. It's like, for goodness sake, MIME attachments in email since, you know, before GUI days. You know, but they had just invented it, and it was a really exciting feature and so forth. So despite the fact that Microsoft, you know, continues to invent these things that have been around for a long time or come up with by other people, we're still making headway. And you got to remember, Microsoft has got, first of all, they've got, like, huge inertia in the marketplace. They've also got piles and piles of wax and wax of dough. So we're actually doing pretty good. We're not, you know, we suck at it in some ways, but on another hand, considering that we've got no money, you know, we're like, you know, we don't have that kind of a budget to do advertising, we're actually doing well, but I think we could do a whole heck of a lot better. That's one of the things that I want to explore. You know, how can we do this a whole lot better than we're doing right now? Because we've got a better product. And with a better product, we should be able to command a much bigger market share than we do on the desktop. Boy, that guy just goes on and on, doesn't he?
Yeah, he don't know what to, he just rambles on. But, you know,
I can see the guys on the other end going, has he stopped? Has he stopped talking? Can we say something?
You know, because I had another question. Now I forgot what it was. He just kept...
No, it's like that white noise. I was getting ready to take a nap, and now you stop. I'm going to have to wake up again.
I may have to hurt you guys. I don't know. I'm just kidding. I'm completely nonviolent. I just want to point that out.
Okay, here's something that's kind of, you know, it frosted me a little bit. But for the longest time, you know, we've had Linux... And
that's something that's hard to do. Cover
BSD.
Dan with frosting, I'll tell you.
Yeah. We had BSDs, we got the Linux.
Something
and
I don't
there's always
know.
Like that possibility that you could try out these operating systems by, you know, dual booting. And everybody was saying, well, you know, nobody wants to dual boot. Dual boot is it's ucky, it's icky. And then we have, okay, well, you can run virtual, you know, virtual right. machines. And they're like, well, who's going
to
want
to
run Linux
nobody wants to
in
do
a
that.
Virtual machine? Or who's going to run on Windows in a virtual machine under Linux? And then all of a sudden, Apple comes along and says, hey, we're on the Intel architecture right now. We got Parallels. We got Boot Camp. You can run Windows. And everybody all of a sudden turns around and says, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing in the world. Virtual machines. We can run Windows under Linux. We can run Windows under OS 10 in a virtual machine. We can dual boot Windows in OS 10. It's the greatest thing in the world.
I can't believe it.
It's like,
Apple is so innovative.
Yeah, and it's like, what the hell is going on? And then they top it off and saying, but you know what? Leopard is going to come out, and you're going to be able to do virtual desktops. Woo! Thank you, Spaces.
I like the virtual desktops, man. That didn't exist until Apple introduced it. Thank you, Apple.
Right. I mean, what happened? I mean, it's been all this time going on, and all of a sudden, just because Apple puts it out,
yeah, they have
the whole, you know, everybody just goes, the gates have opened. We finally have... found, you know, Nirvana.
They got a better marketing machine than we do.
This goes back to the episode we did about the Commodore history. You know, Apple, you know, even back way back then, they were trying to say, you know, the number one selling personal computer back in like 1981 or 82 or whatever. It was bullshit, man. It was smoke and mirrors, man. That's what Apple does.
No. You know, I know what you're saying, but keep in mind, again, I mean, what Apple is a marketing machine, probably
that's
more
right.
than anything
yeah, props
else.
Props to that.
Yeah, I mean that's what they do. They're out there selling stuff, and not only are they a marketing machine, but when they sell Apple product, you know, whatever it happens to be, an iPod, whether it's a Mac or whatever, they're selling a lifestyle. You know, it's like to be cool, to be on top of things, to you know, you must be running this stuff. You know, you don't want to be the only one on your street who isn't running an iPod Nano, right? You know, I mean, so. So it's that sort of thing, but again, we're back to the whole idea of marketing. You know, are we getting the message out in a way that gets people excited? And I, I think that we have an awful lot to learn from these people. I mean, we as in the open source community have an awful lot to learn about how to sell that message, how to get people, you know, to accept that there is an alternative out there, and to accept the fact that, you know, these things aren't necessarily all brand spanking new things. These things have been around for a while. They've been available for a while. And if you're getting all excited about the fact that it's now available on this product here, maybe you should think that it's been over here for a long time. Keep in mind, too, that Mac actually fought this battle uphill for a long time. Remember when Windows 95 came out? They were pushing out that little ad that was saying Windows 95 is Apple 1980, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were doing exactly the same thing. Microsoft had the Rolling Stones singing Start Me Up, and they had big light shows and so forth in London and Paris and New York and so forth. They had a 300-foot banner going down the CN Tower in Toronto, you know, saying Windows 95. And there was nothing new in Windows 95, absolutely nothing new. The big thing that people could say is like, wow, I can now format a diskette while I, you know, write a document. It's like, wow, isn't that exciting? I do two things at once. I've never been able to do that in Windows before.
I've never been able to do that in Windows either.
I mean, what version of Windows were you using,
that's
man?
Right.
But you know what I'm saying,
right?
I mean, that's the way that it was being marketed, and even Apple, who could say, hey, I had a GUI for a long time, but Apple was far from the first company to have a GUI. I mean, GUIs existed in the Unix world before Apple was even thought of.
I had a GUI on my Commodore 64. Thank you very much.
I love my Commodores.
Yeah, Commodore 64, Commodore VIC 20, I remember those things.
Oh, the
I had
Amiga.
A Commodore 10.
Like, yes, really?
The Amiga.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had Brian Bagnell, who wrote this really awesome book about Commodore, On the Edge, The Rise and Fall of Commodore. Have you read that, Marcel?
No.
Awesome book. You should definitely check it out.
Yeah, we had him on a couple weeks ago. Fantastic show.
All right. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's
check it out in the logs.
Yeah.
No, it's definitely worth, you know, if you're at all interested in the history of Commodore, it's a fantastic book.
Yeah, that was a company from north of Toronto, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Came rolling out of there.
And then they moved down here.
Yep, then they moved to Pennsylvania.
Gave Canada the finger and moved up.
Well, what they did was it became a multinational corporation, right. So they didn't have to pay taxes anywhere.
Okay. I'll just trust you. I'll listen to the show. I'll I love those Skype pauses. You know, everybody just sort of waits for the silence.
That's actually not that bad.
It's been worse lately, yeah.
See, the problem is, like, Link brings over this, like, really nice alcohol, and then we have this cheap beer to go with it, and I had a question I wanted to ask you, and I can't remember what it is.
It's gone.
I have a question for you, Marcel.
A little whiskey and Dan's brain is fried.
Yeah, that's it.
On the last episode of Computer America, you were talking about machines with Linux pre-installed. You listed a whole bunch of companies.
Yes.
It seems to be getting better and better every day with that. You know, I think half the battle with Linux, even though it's super easy to install these days, most people don't want to be bothered, just like they don't want to be bothered with a Windows install. You know, I think this
Well, no, they don't.
This is the way to go with it.
If everybody had to install Windows... Actually, you know, that's what we should do. We should make it so that the law says that your operating system has to be sold separate from the machine. If we did that, Windows is dead overnight.
Yep. That's for sure.
Well, you know
we like that.
Before you did, I don't know if Pat asked a question or made a comment, but I'm going to add on to what Pat said, and I'm hoping that when I sell my house, I'm going to have enough money to buy a laptop, and I put a question out there, you know, on my blog and said, you know, I'm debating whether to get the Lenovo laptop, you know, a Lenovo laptop, which would come with Windows pre-installed, because I can't afford that, quote, Linux Lenovo laptop at astronomical prices, or to go with a laptop from System 76, which has Ubuntu pre-installed.
Yes, it does. You're right.
I mean, what is your opinion on that? Because I don't want to say the reactions that I've gotten from people and taint your opinion, which I probably wouldn't anyhow, but what do you think?
Well, first of all, it's funny that you should say that on your blog. I actually did that on my blog as well. I've got an entry on my site. It's actually, if people actually want to throw their opinion on it, go to www.marcelgagne.com. There's an entry there that says, I need a new notebook, Captain. There are already 10 comments from people on what they suggest I buy. And I actually have, I mean, I wanted to wait until I've moved, and of course I've just moved now, so in the next couple of weeks I'm going to be looking for a new notebook after things settle down a little bit here. But I know for a fact that just about any machine that I could get is going to run Linux without too much trouble. So I don't need to buy, you know, somebody's, you know, Linux pre-installed. No, I don't, anyway. As you say, you know, most people want their operating system pre-installed, but I actually don't need it to be pre-installed. And quite frankly, I haven't found an awful lot of problems. Now, I realize that there are the occasional things that don't work. Like, you remember I mentioned that I booted up the Kubuntu Live CD on the Mac notebook, right?
Right.
The only thing that didn't work for me at the time was the iSight, the little camera. You know, for the things that I was playing with, the things that I tried on there. Otherwise, it seemed to work just dandy. Now, regardless of the hardware that you get, I mean, if you buy a modern notebook, yes, there were probably things that, you know, that hasn't been certified with Linux. There are probably things that may not work or won't work properly or whatever. But for the most part, you know, 99% of the things that are on there work fine. This compact Presario notebook, the 2500 that I've got sitting in front here, everything worked. I mean, right out of the box, the FireWire worked, the wireless card worked, all that stuff. The only thing that didn't work are those stupid little buttons at the top on the keyboard, you know, to fire up your email or to go on the internet or things like that.
You can fix that.
No, who cares? Oh, I know you can, but honestly, who cares? You know, that was the only thing that didn't work on this notebook. So I'm not particularly worried about that. What I wanted in terms of the blogging, what they've bought that they're using with Linux and what they liked. You know, so effectively I'm saying, you know, if you're happy with your hardware, I'd like to hear about it.
Well, we're going to have the System 76 guys on in a few weeks. And
oh, we are?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, look at the calendar.
Yeah, because, you know, I look at this and I say, I was comparing the two, and I really do like the System 76. And regardless of the fact of whether it comes with Linux pre-installed or not, you know, honestly, it doesn't matter to me because I've never had a problem installing any version of Linux I want. And, you know, if I really wanted to install the version I wanted, which would be Arch or Slack, you know, you're not going to get that pre-installed on anything.
No.
So, you know, it's tough because, I mean, Lenovo ThinkPads have such a great reputation, but I'd like to support a company that pre-installs Linux on the same, you know.
Well, you want to support companies that are doing this. You know? This is the way.
But there, I mean, there are companies that I just sort of have to, and I have to put up that list on my site. But System 76, Angel Computers. If you're in the Arizona, like in the Arizona area, there's what is it? Red 7 Computers down there sell systems with Linux pre. There are increasingly quite a number of companies that will do that. There's, of course, the classics, you know, places like Emperor Linux and so forth. But if you go to some of the sites, and I'm trying to think if it's Emperor Penguin Computing, one of the two, I mean, if you go and take a look, what they're selling is a Dell notebook in some cases. So, you know, a Dell Toshiba notebook. And they actually tell you, you know, it's a Dell notebook, a Toshiba notebook, except that we sell it with Linux pre-installed, you know, and make sure that, you know, the various bits and pieces work. So you don't actually necessarily have to get it from those companies, but as you pointed out, you're supporting a company that does sell Linux pre-installed, or, you know, that, and that is a good thing. I mean, it helps the community. It's like the old thing, why would you buy a copy of Linux if you can get one free? Well, you know, it can be for technical support. It can be so that it's a certified product. Like some companies, obviously, I have to have a version of Linux that is certified to work with my product. Let's say that it's an Oracle database, for instance. So they'll buy Linux specifically for that reason, so that they will get the ongoing technical support. But of course, you're rewarding the company that helps develop these drivers, that helps develop the software, that helps keep the industry going, so to speak.
It's a tough call. It is a tough call. I mean, one of the things that was brought to my attention is, hey, you know, look at Lenovo. Look at the ThinkPad. It's been around for a long time. System 76, yeah, not as long. you know, when you need to get this thing if you need to get this thing serviced in a couple of months, are they still going to be around?
You know, I think you sort of have to take these chances anyway. I'll give you an idea. I had a, obviously it wasn't the Knowles days, I have an IBM ThinkPad that's sitting up here, which, interestingly enough, the hard disk crashed on it today.
No.
My wife's ThinkPad. It just died. This notebook has had every freaking problem in the world. I said freaking, by the way. Every problem in the world. The hard disk has crashed. The motherboard has died. This would be like the third hard drive or something like that. Keeps getting sent out. It's like, okay, so I've got a big name notebook. Now, they're always lemons, okay? So I'm not saying that things are necessarily bad hardware, but obviously this was a bad piece of hardware. Oh, great, IBM exists, IBM is out there, but I keep having to send my notebook out to get it fixed. You know, where's the plus on that? The compact that I've got here, I've had to replace the hard drive on it. I've had to replace, there was something on the power supply on it. So this thing's been out like three times to be fixed. It wouldn't charge the batteries, so the battery had to be replaced. Power pack wouldn't work anymore, that had to be replaced. So I've had that thing fixed five times. So, okay, big company, big name, they're going to be around tomorrow, but I've had tons of problems. IBM ThinkPad, big company, big time, going to be around tomorrow, but I've had tons of problems as well. So let's say you buy your System 76 thing, continues to work for the next 3 years, flawless, and, you know, like, there's no guarantee that you're going to get better service, that you're going to get, you're going to have a more trouble-free system just because you bought it from a company that, you know, has got several $1 billion behind it.
Ah, good point.
There's nothing wrong with supporting the little guys. And in fact, if we wanted strictly the attitude of, you know, let's not, you know, let's make sure that we always go with the big guys, why the hell would we ever want to go with Linux? You know, it's loaded with little guys. I mean, there are little guys all over the place compared to, you know, compared to Microsoft.
I don't know. I've met some of the developers and not all of them are little guys, man. I'm not a little guy.
You know what I mean.
Well, you know, speaking of the big boys,
yeah.
What is your impression of, you know, we had such
Richard Stallman.
No, we had such a huge buildup of this, you know, oh my God, Lenovo's going to announce this SUSE Linux laptop. And then finally, it's, you know, the technical details are released, and it's not a SUSE Linux laptop. It's a laptop with, you know, FreeDOS that you can install SUSE on, and there'll be some support. But it costs
$3,000 plus.
I mean, what's your opinion of that?
My opinion is it sucks. yeah, I was actually very... No, I'm serious. I was actually very disappointed to find that that was, like, the offering. It's like, if you want a notebook with Linux, we'll give you... And the only reason I believe, okay, and this is me speculating, and I could be totally wrong, and if Lenovo wants to come on your show and tell me that I'm totally out to lunch on this, that's fine. But I believe that the only reason that Lenovo did that is because they took so much crap from the community, from the business community, from people out there who wanted to be able to continue running Linux on their notebooks. And, of course, IBM ThinkPads, you know, IBM has been really willing to say, yes, of course you can run Linux on your ThinkPad. And Lenovo said, well, we're not going to offer any support anymore. Remember when they had that announcement just
right
before they came out and said it's going to be a Linux notebook? They took an amazing amount of crap for that. It was really, really bad PR, and they turned around and said, oh, okay, actually, we are going to produce a notebook for Linux, and yes, we continue to support it, and in fact, we're going to make this model available, $3,000. Well, that way, they don't have to produce too many of them, do they?
No.
It's like Dell coming out and saying, and I'm pissed off at Dell for this as well. Dell said, okay. Now, Dell, to be fair, has been selling servers, you know, for a long time, saying you can have a server with Red Hat Linux. The reason they do that is because in the server world, it doesn't take it. You don't have to do anything to sell Linux. You know, Linux on a server, of course, makes perfect sense. You're going to run your web server on Apache. You're not going to run it on IIS. You know, only 18% of the world is stupid enough. Excuse me, foolish. And oh wait, dedicated enough. Yeah, that's it. Dedicated.
No. Just say what you mean.
I did. to run it on that platform. So So it's not a big deal to try to sell Linux on a server. On a desktop, it's a little bit more of a tough sale. Now, Dell came out and said, okay, we're going to make some notebooks available with Linux. I had to dig deep, deep, deep on their website. And in the end, the Linux notebook, now, I haven't checked lately. Maybe things have changed. But the Linux, the Linux that were available actually cost more money for exactly the same hardware than if you bought it with Windows pre-installed. Now, you tell me that that is an incentive, you know, for people to want to buy a system with Linux pre-installed. And then, of course, to go and say, well, you know, we made Linux systems available, nobody wanted to buy them. Well, duh.
Yeah, I felt the same way, and that's unfortunate. Because I was all excited. I'm like, when I sell this house, I'm getting a Lenovo laptop, and I'm getting it with Linux pre-installed. But not for $3,000.
Yeah, and frankly, I'm not sure that I want to support them under those circumstances. You know, I mean, if the fact of the matter is, we can run Linux on you know, somewhat more modest hardware than that, and they should make it available. I mean, if you really want to see whether people are going to be interested in buying that stuff, available on more modest hardware, decent hardware. Like, don't just sell crap. You know, make it decent hardware, but, you know, make it something that more people can afford.
That's true.
I can hear the clicking and tapping on in the background.
Yeah, that's some admin related issues.
You hear the Windows ding.
Yeah.
Ding, ding.
Yeah. It's Link's over here trying to fix his network neighborhood.
That's what it is, yep.
you know, Marcel, I want to
fix.
Well, go ahead, No, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
All right, I will then. I want to get back to your new book for a second, moving to Ubuntu. In the past, you and a lot of other people who've written similar books that are geared towards people, you know, entering the Linux world, have been very, very, very supportive of KDE.
That's
but
right.
Now you have Ubuntu, which has been extremely supportive of the GNOME desktop. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion there? I mean, do you think GNOME has, stepped up to the plate? Has, you know, made it a desktop that's accessible to new users? Or do you still feel KDE is the better choice?
Well, quite honestly, I still think KDE is a better desktop. But I have actually I've covered KDE extensively in other books, and what this did is it gave me an opportunity to cover the GNOME desktop and do a decent job of covering it as well, and is actually the reason that I went for Ubuntu as opposed to doing a moving to Kubuntu. Moving to Ubuntu gave me an opportunity to write a book for somebody who is going to switch or start working with Linux but running on a different desktop. And I was kind of excited to have the opportunity to do that because, well, let's face it, I've been pretty KDE-centric on most of the other books. Now, to be fair to me, I've covered like tons and tons of software. I mean, I've talked about Window Maker, applications that run under Window Maker. I've talked about the Enlightenment desktop. I've covered ISWM. I've covered XFCE. There are so many different applications, so many different environments in the Linux and open source world that it would be idiotic, quite frankly, for me to just stick to one, one environment. And I don't think that that's something that I want to do. And I don't think that there is one environment that's right for absolutely everyone. I know it sounds cliche, but we always talk about choice in the open source community. Say, hey, all of a sudden you've got choice. But you know what? I actually do believe that it's a great thing to have choice. Because, you know, despite I tend to prefer working in one environment over another, that doesn't mean that there isn't some benefit and there isn't some, that an alternate environment isn't better for other people. I mentioned ISWM, for instance. You know, when we were talking about, older hardware, you know, more modest hardware, it's great that there's still a graphical desktop that isn't going to kill, a more modest piece of hardware, for instance, so that you can actually still run Linux under those circumstances. Now, in the book, in moving to Ubuntu, I actually do point out that, yes, I've covered KDE in other books, and there is a chapter on how to turn, if you'll pardon the expression, Ubuntu into Kubuntu.
Of course there is.
Now, that's a good discussion. I don't know. It seems You know, you talk to the Ubuntu people, and they say that, you know, Kubuntu is basically the same thing with just a KDE front end. But I disagree. It seems to be a much different operating system, and there's a lot of differences.
Yeah.
It isn't. Under the surface, it's all applications.
It ain't brown.
What's that?
Ship brown.
No, but they're right. It's actually true. It is the same operating system under the surface. I mean, you're dealing with the same kernel. You're dealing with the same basic environment. You're different. You're dealing with the same same sources on the website. So you've got the same repositories and so forth. It's not like it is a different system. But of course, you might be tempted to think it's different, because what people experience is the graphical desktop and the applications that are selected for it. And the thing that I've liked that Ubuntu and Kubuntu and Zubuntu and, you know, all the other Ubuntus have done is that they've provided a, if you'll pardon the expression, a sane set of applications for somebody who is new to Linux. And like I said, you can pick your favorite flavor of Ubuntu or Kubuntu, which one you like, but what they've done is they've said, this is your web browser, this is your word processing package, this is your terminal application, this is your Juke program, Rhythmbox on the GNOME side, and Amarok on the KDE side, just as an example. But they've picked applications that they feel are best of breeds, and quickly, for the most part, I agree with them. I actually think that it's a good choice. I think it's great that I load up Zuse or I load up Mandriva. For me, anyway, I think it's great. I've got three different terminal programs. I've got four web browsers. I've got three word processors. Hey, that's cool. I like having all those things. I like experimenting with those things. I like trying them out. And, of course, I write about these things. But more than anything, I think the big strength, the real strength with Ubuntu or any of the other Ubuntus is that they've made it simple. They've said, these are the applications that do this job. This is the application that does that job. This is the application that does that job, and so forth. And I think that that's a lot less frightening, and it's a lot easier for somebody who is new to Linux to get used to. You know? If you don't have to say, well, which video player should I use? Well, there's only one. You use that one. Now, of course, you can load all those things up after the fact, but they make it easy for somebody who's new to it. And regardless of which version you're dealing with.
Okay, now here's a pressing question. I know that you've done your research and your homework on Ubuntu, and I want to know this. We all know that Ubuntu means like community, right? Doing things together as community.
Yeah, I am who I am because of what we all are.
Right.
Or that sort
now,
of thing, you know?
here's the thing. If you break that in half and you start adding K to Ubuntu or Z, Zubuntu, are you changing the word? Like, is the back half of the word mean my ass or something like that? And you're making something bad out of it. You don't know. You have to ask these things, right? Because, you know, who else is going to ask if, it, you know, all of a sudden we're talking about Zubuntu and it means play with my ass, right?
The Ubuntu guys are never going to talk to us again.
You know, of course, that I don't speak Swahili, so I...
No, but I mean, you did your research. I figured maybe you know that Zubuntu means, you know, play with my ass or something like that. I don't know.
You know, enough of that. We're going to get hate mail.
But you don't know. You know, did anybody stop and think about that kind of thing before they named it?
You know, you guys are going to be in real trouble after you hang up the phone.
Yeah, we're already, you know, we burned our bridges with the Ubuntu crowd.
Dan!
With our interview with Mark Shuttleworth, but... you know, that's a good point. I mean, if you start slapping...
Did you have him on the show and beat him up or what?
No,
we were nice to him.
I thought we were nice to him.
Dan was joking, and he made an off-the-cuff remark, and I don't think it went over too well.
Yeah, and that was the end of the interview. I mean, it was kind of like at the end of the interview. It was one of those things where I said something, you know, kind of like comparing Ubuntu to Windows or something, or their practices.
I don't think you appreciate it.
And, you know, it was like right at the end of the interview, and then that was the end of the interview.
It just kind of dropped flat after that.
And then I apologize, but I don't know.
It could have been nothing. It could have been, a lack of sense of humor kind of thing. I don't know.
Plus, he wasn't feeling that well.
Right. He was really sick when we interviewed him, too.
I mean, he's a great guy, and I appreciate everything he's done. And I think Ubuntu is fantastic.
Oh, so do I. I think what he's done and what he's put together and... I mean, the guy literally has put his money where his mouth is.
Absolutely.
You know, he says he believes in this stuff, and he believes in it enough to throw millions of dollars at it. I mean, I don't know how many of us would do that, frankly. You know, despite the fact that we, you know, we say, hey, we believe in this stuff, would we be willing to set up a foundation, you know, to help build this stuff, to effectively lay money into the wind and see where it goes? I mean, it's the only distribution that I know of, you know, that you can go to the website and they will send you a live CD anywhere in the world. And of course, people can do that. They can go to shipit, shipit.ubuntu.com or shipit.kubuntu.com. And, you know, they'll send you a stack of CDs anywhere. It's incredible. I think it's amazing. I think it's fantastic. And my hat's off to them for doing that.
Yeah. Good stuff.
You know, you had mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, like, hey, you know, Ubuntu, same thing on in the background, underneath, it's all the same. And I find that kind of interesting that I hear time and time again people are like, well, I tried Red Hat, and my wireless card didn't work, so I fired up Mandriva, and now my wireless card works, and that's the greatest, but my sound doesn't work, so I tried SUSE. And now my sound works, but my wireless card doesn't work. But, you know, my DVD drive works. And, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what? It's all the same thing underneath.
Yep.
It doesn't matter which distribution you're using. It's just the same thing. But they keep jumping around because, you know, one distribution detects it right. The other one doesn't.
You know, sometimes I think it's more that, you know, they enjoy just playing around. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, it is possible for this distribution today to be able to handle this particular piece of hardware better than another one. And the reason for that, of course, is that you've got different levels, and you've got, you know, they are at different levels. So the new version of Mandriva that just comes out might be able to support different 3D cards better than the current version of Fedora. And the reason it can do that is because it's a newer version and it uses, you know, more up-to-date drivers and so forth. So, that in the end, I mean, that's really the only reason. If you wait long enough, like let's say that you, if you wait long enough, you will probably have, you know, all those pieces of hardware working. Just by virtue of the fact that the next version of the operating system that comes out, remember, in the Linux world, you don't have to wait a heck of a long time for a new version of a distribution to come out. You know, 6-8 months, there's a new one out there. It's not like Windows where you have to wait, you know, 5, 6, and how long has it been for Vista there? You know, you don't have to wait that long for the next version of an operating system to come out.
A fine operating system.
I'm still waiting for their first operating system to come out.
You know, the best version of Windows was the Windows 95 second edition. It hasn't been the same since.
I think the best version was
gone downhill since
Windows 2.0. Back in the dot. Well, you know what? 3.11 was pretty cool when it came out because it had like the built-in networking thing going on there. And then it just, you know, went way downhill fast. They got out the crayons and made the new interface, and then they got out the magic markers and made the new interface on top of that. And broke the TCP/IP stack.
It's a superior and more secure operating system than has ever existed in the Windows environment.
Yeah,
and I'm sure at the time they had invented TCP/IP, but it's one of those things. No, I know what you're saying. You know, people jumping from one distribution to another, but sometimes I think it's because, you know, it's fun more than anything else, or you know, they just. Unfortunately, we do this to ourselves. You know, we say, well, you know, I was running this version and it detected everything. You know, so it's great because it's got amazing hardware detection. Well, as time goes on,
oh, do we lose him?
Did we lose you? Hello,
I think we
Marcel.
Did. Yay,
he's
Skype
gone.
Baby!
It died.
Now I got to figure out which virtual terminals.
Yeah, well, just don't kill the one that's recording our show. Oh, Marcel, you know, this is what you get when you deal with us, I guess.
Dude, what the hell happened to it? What happened to the freaking terminal it was running
in? Are you freaking compiling your kernel again? No, damn it, Dan.
No, it just dropped. No, here. Okay, here, I found it.
It just dropped them off.
This written might have been people talking about the stream died, too.
Did the stream die, too?
Yes.
We must have lost our connection.
The stream has passed.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
You know, I don't know what happened there. It's like all of a sudden the connection just dropped.
Damn.
So I apologize for that.
Compiling his kernel again. That's
because we were really I didn't do anything.
Dan has been pretty good about that stuff lately. I have to give him credit.
Dan, check the stream still.
Yep, they're saying the stream is still down, but we're still recording. So anyway,
this will be on the at least on the podcast.
You know what? I wanted to ask you a couple of real unrelated things, Marcel.
Go ahead.
One of them was just back to that whole thing about the call-ins on the show with Leo. Do you ever get anybody that's just like really psycho that just calls in and like, you know, tells you you're a loser or something like that? Any weirdos that sneak past them?
No, not that I'm aware of. Anyway,
that's no fun.
I've been doing the show with him for like, I guess a little over 2 years now, and I've never seen that happen.
Never get a weirdo that calls in and says he wants to have your babies or something like
Nobody
that.
Nobody calls in and says, Baba Booey, Baba Booey, Baba Booey.
I keep trying again, but they won't let me. Did we lose you again, Marcel?
What the hell?
I think we lost him again.
No, he still says it's on.
Static, though. That's all we got.
It's...
Try him again.
All right, who's running this... App get this upgrade.
No, look, I can see it right there.
Yep, he's down. Whoa.
What did you just press? The power.
Why did you press the power?
Because he said it was off.
No, I didn't mean the power. I meant that you can see that.
Which power?
There's a connection issue with the DSL modem.
Okay.
And he turned the power on and off.
I didn't kill the recording, did I?
No, you didn't kill the recording.
The power on what?
Look.
The modem's like going crazy.
Okay.
Up, it's back.
They reconnected.
It's back. The IRC's been going all the way through.
Yeah, what the hell? How could the IRC still be going and nobody else?
My goodness.
Yeah, no, there seems to be an issue going on with my ISP, and I apologize.
Oh, man.
They finally cracked down on us, I think.
It's probably a good thing that this is the last show here, man.
What it is.
We're going out with a bang.
Dan is closing the account down, and they've figured out that we've gone way over our bandwidth limit.
That's right. Dan's going to get his bill for like $9 million tomorrow morning.
Dude, I'm ticked off that I can't take my account with me, but hey, you know.
Wow.
Sorry.
And I wanted to ask you something else, Marcel, but I've completely forgotten now. If it comes
to... We're talking about Call for Help.
Yeah, I was asking about if you got any weirdos on Call for Help, but there was something else, too, that was completely... Oh, I know what it was. I was looking at your website, and, you know, this is the... Are you still there?
He dropped off again.
He's gone.
Yeah, we're having problems here, man. It keeps, like, coming on and then dropping.
This is just bad.
That's what you get for disconnecting the phone line.
There you go.
There you go,
at
man.
At least we're still recording.
Yeah, we can always do our own show.
I didn't disconnect the phone line yet.
Oh. Yeah, the connection's down. I think the IRC is finally down, too. Doesn't look like it's being updated.
Hello.
It's dead.
It's dead, Jim.
Well, it's just going to be us and the whiskey now.
No, wait. I see.
Oh, it's back.
Yeah, we got people back.
It's back, man. It's back. The little light one went green again.
Try him again.
It's going up. It's going down. It's going up. It's going down.
It's getting annoying.
Hello.
Oh, he's there.
All right, you're back now? All right. My 22nd question that I was going to ask you is, I was looking at your website. And I see that you only have us listed on there once.
This is his third time.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, like, you've been on here three times, man. We're only on your website once.
I've only been on your show once before, actually.
No,
this is the third time.
No, it's only the second time.
No,
it's the third time. You were on our.
Oh, is it?
You were on our 100th episode.
And you were one previous to that too.
Yeah, the one previous to that, and this is the third.
All right, I lied. All right, I admit it. I lied. I can promise. I promise that there will be an entry on the website for you tomorrow.
You know, we just want to get our, you know, 15 seconds of fame.
That's okay. I'll link to the podcast, and I'll apologize profusely on the website. How's that?
Okay.
Marcel, you really need to update your interviews and appearances page.
You know, you're going to find this hard to believe, but I've been busy.
I'm sure you've been.
Yeah, let's bring the guests on and criticize their website.
That's right.
I've been writing books. I've been writing articles. Yes. I've been doing TV shows. I've been busy.
You have a life.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me put
that's
it another
no
way.
Excuse you.
I have sinned against you. I apologize.
But you're a Linux celebrity. You're not allowed to have a life. No one that's a Linux celebrity is allowed to have a life. Your public expects so much of you.
Well, like I said, I'll apologize on the site tomorrow. There will be free tomorrow saying I'm evil and bad, and I apologize to the guys at the Explained Tech Show.
Actually, ShopRat, who's from Detroit, said the Wolf the Lug is his only real lug that he belongs to. There's no lugs around him, he said.
How the hell can there not be a lug in Detroit?
Hey, Detroit's a fairly big city.
Maybe they just suck.
Well, there is,
you know?
there is a Michigan. In fact, I'm going to be chatting at...
You gotta be kidding,
man!
The modem looks okay.
Pat, are you pissing on the modem?
Now it's blinking.
We got rid of the dog. Now Pat's pissing on the modem. What the hell, man!
This is pretty bad. I think we should wrap up.
I'm wondering if this is
who's doing an upgrade. Confess.
Not me.
I wonder if this is something to do with the asterisk.
Bring it down, man.
What isn't
why
this?
Would it be the asterisk box?
Kill the asterisk box.
I don't know. But
no, but you know, it's the asterisk box because I tried to get into it earlier. It probably still believes
there
I'm trying
go.
To get there.
Shut the fucker off.
Kill it, man.
I did kill it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to fart in a minute. That's going to kill it for sure. That's going to kill everything.
Like, you had problems with your asterisk box, right? You were doing the...
Dude, you know what? I'm telling you, I swear...
There is an issue in the switch over there on Verizon or COVAD or Verizon's end that has been off and on for the past couple of years. And it's been so... Like, it's happened, like, maybe once a year that
it's very random.
Down. Right, and this is... I've seen it happening more and more past couple of weeks, because this happened the other night.
Looks like it's coming back.
Well, I'll tell you what. As far as the Trix box thing, I swear to you, that fucking computer is possessed
back,
by
man.
The devil.
Yeah, it's back.
You know what I mean? I don't know what the hell is going on with it. Like, I don't touch the fucking thing. It's locked in a cabinet, man. There's not even a keyboard on it. No touching it, locked in a cabinet, way far back. No one, no fingers next to it, nothing. There's no mice in my house to press anything. And one day, like, I'll go to bed and everything's working. The next morning I get up, the fucking thing is down. It's not even down. Everything is up. It just doesn't work
anymore. It sounds like, the way you describe it, that when they did the Trix box switchover, they took two steps back and one step forward, you know?
Maybe three back, you know what I mean? It really pissed me. And then, you know, I screw around with it for three more days. Put the exact same configuration, the exact same, okay? The exact same configuration. And now all of a sudden the damn thing works again.
Hello.
You know, I'm sorry. I've had this issue happen before, like maybe once a year, but I'm noticing in the past couple of weeks. There's something with my ISP. There is a switch. It has to do with Verizon that COVAD has had to go out and look at a few times. And I don't think they ever replaced whatever's going on that. But there's been a few times that this issue has happened. And it stinks. And I apologize because what you say is gold and important.
You suck, Dan.
Yeah, I do suck. There's nobody to blame but me.
Bad Dan, no doubt.
Right. Well, there you go. Mea culpa's all around.
I quit. That's it.
Dave's moving to Virginia.
That's it. I'm leaving. Well, you know what? We'll see what happens with the new ISP, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, it's not my ISP. It's the equipment that my ISP has to run on top of that's run by or operated by Verizon. Because Verizon is the best.
You know, I recently switched ISPs, and I've been very happy since I've switched over. The only negative thing is I've had to move my blog off of port 80, the web server running. But other than that, man, it's been great. I've been very happy with it.
Yes.
What do you have up there, Marcel?
What's that? Sorry?
What type of internet service do you have up there?
Actually, I'm running on cable here. I'm running on Rogers Extreme High Speed Cable.
What kind of bandwidth do you get?
Is that Roy Rogers?
No, that's like Ted Rogers. 6 megabits, actually.
Six down and how much up?
I forget.
768?
Actually, I think it's higher than that. I think it's 1.5.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
My website, my actual website is actually hosted at a company in Montreal called iWeb, and that one is a 10 megabit pipe. It's great.
Yeah.
Now, I would figure you would host your own website.
I used to, actually. But I've got a dedicated over there, as in it's my machine and only my machine. And I've got, you know, obviously full root access. It's a machine running Fedora Core, and it's kind of nice. It's nice that the equipment is off site. It's just one less thing for me to worry about in the house, and I've got incredible bandwidth. You know, the sort of thing I wouldn't be able to do with an ISP.
It's good to have a remote server when you have small kids too, because you know they like to do that stuff.
Yeah, Sebastian is really getting into the whole idea of playing with it. He doesn't know what it's for yet, but he loves pounding on the keys. You know,
look,
so.
Dad, it's a button.
Boop. Yeah.
Exactly.
I got a couple of questions for you.
Still?
Yeah, in honor of, our being the last night here, there's always standard questions we've asked guests. And since you have written the Moving to Ubuntu... your opinion, KDE or GNOME, what do you like?
You asked me that already.
I know, but I didn't get a clear answer whether you still like KDE more than GNOME.
Oh.
Or...
Yes,
you
do.
Well,
you
I
know,
don't want to answer again, damn you.
No, I actually still prefer to run KDE desktop.
Okay.
I don't always run KDE. I sometimes run GNOME. I sometimes run Window Maker. I sometimes run IceWM. But my personal favorite choice is still KDE as a desktop. What I'm running these days, I originally installed my notebook as Ubuntu, and then I added the KDE desktop on top of it. So it's actually an Ubuntu desk. It's not a Kubuntu installation. It's an Ubuntu installation with KDE added on top of it after the fact.
Cool.
Which you can do by just doing apt-get space install space kubuntu-desktop.
That's true, you can.
That's right. Very difficult.
That's how I do it every time.
So now, are you VI, Emacs, or Nano?
VI.
Now, do you prefer a Linux party or a Lemon party?
Don't
do that one yet. Just don't even bite on
ignore
that.
Ignore that. Ignore.
Just ignore that one. It's... Trust me.
Consider it ignored.
Yes. It's best for everyone.
That's in honor of the room.
Oh, yes. VI or Vim, yeah, take your pick.
Awesome.
Definitely. Actually, if you go to my website, there's a poll out there right now, which is the one true editor is, and VI is winning by a long shot.
Well, it would have to be. It should be the only entry, right?
Well, no, actually, I've got I've got VI, Emacs, gedit, Kate, Ed, and other.
Yeah, but see, all of those are great editors, but you know the guys who programmed them used VI to do it, so,
However, you have to remember that the people who programmed VI started it with Ed.
Well, yeah.
Isn't the default editor on Ubuntu, isn't that Nano, or is that Debian?
On Ubuntu, it's gedit.
No, I mean if you're not in the graphical
on the command line.
In X, if you're down there in the command line.
Like I don't know. I just always type VI, so I don't know. I don't know if there's anything else there. If anything other
well,
than
if
VI.
you went to run, like, if you did a Chrome tab -e, I'm forgetting what distribution it was that automatically pulled up Nano instead of VI. And
Gentoo?
I thought it was Ubuntu, and I'm sitting there scratching my head like, how the heck do I...
If you do what-e?
Chrome-tab-e. Like, if you wanted to go down and edit your cron jobs, you run Chrome.
I'm
going to
do it right now.
Yeah, let me know what it brings up.
It comes up with Nano.
Yeah, that's what throws me. Because I'm so used to doing it through VI.
Well, isn't that fascinating?
There you go. You learn something new every day, huh?
SUSE brings up VI.
How long
VI is it? Still the one true editor. Absolutely. VI is the one true editor.
Absolutely.
If anybody's listening on the show, they can throw their votes into the poll at www.marcelgagne.com. Just go there, fill in the poll, but VI is going to win. It's up by a long shot.
You have to tell everybody that, you know, and I'm sure it's not on your list, but if they were a real man, what they would do is do it the way I do it, is, of course, just wiping.
Sad.
No, I just wipe magnets over the hard drive, man.
Who needs an editor when you have Ock and Zed?
That's right. Just wipe magnets over the hard drive.
That's the way it goes. So what's coming up for Marcel Gagne? What's the next big project?
The next big project is a book I just finished. It's called Moving to Free Software, and it's due out in December. I'm also, as I pointed out, I'm going to be doing the keynote address at the Free and Open Source Software Symposium at Seneca College. That happens at the end of October. Like I said, I mean, I just moved to Waterloo, so I'm going to getting used to the new area here and what's happening around here. And as far as the next book, I don't know at the moment. I actually I literally just finished the other one. I just finished the going through the copy edits, sixth book. So I've still got a little bit of work to do before that one is done, but that'll be wrapped up in about 2-3 weeks. And not entirely sure which one's next. I'm continuing to write for Linux Journal. I write for UnixReview.com as well. So I still show up on those various places and those magazines, Sysadmin magazine from time to time as well. I don't know. On my Wuftalug, which as far as I know is the only entirely online Linux user group out there, which is actually officially recognized as a Linux user group. So I'm actually in the list of Linux user groups. So that's kind of fun, and right now it's got, it has several hundred people from literally all over the world. I think there are, like, countries represented on there, so it's kind of cool.
Awesome. What is that? What is that noise?
What is it?
What noise?
That's you. Sorry.
I don't know, I'm playing a song for Marcel's new town, you know?
it's
a bad
you know what
song,
it is?
Man. Do you know what it is?
Play
something cool, man.
See, Marcel knows what it is, don't you, Marcel?
That song sucks, man.
Yes, I know. It's Abba Water. It's a great tune, man.
It is a good tune.
It's
crap, man.
Pat has no fucking clue.
It's too bad.
Yeah, lots of taste.
It's too bad you couldn't make it down to the Ohio Linux Fest this weekend.
Yeah, that's shaping up to be a real fantastic show, man. There's going to be a lot of people there.
Because it would also be awesome to meet you face to face.
It would. Yes, we're going to have to do that.
Maybe we'll make it like next time around. This time, just incredibly bad timing. So
we got to go up to Canada at some point. I know Toronto has a lot of shows. And there's a pretty big free and open source software community up there.
I think the Canadians are holding our new citizenship papers up there for us,
too. I know, man. We have so many Canadians on the show. We're waiting for our dual citizenship papers to come through. Our honorary Canadian citizenship.
Then again, maybe they've listened to us and don't want us there. They have the guard posted at the...
They have our pictures.
Posted up at the entrance.
That's right.
Don't let those guys in.
Yeah.
Don't let those guys in. They say the F-bomb on their show. The bad man.
No, we love...
We have
quite a few Canadian friends, yeah. I must say, man. We've had a lot of Canadian guests on the show over the years.
Well, it's nice to know that you've got good representation from this side of the border.
We've had a lot. Think about it.
I think there's a really large open source community in Canada, I think.
Is there a large open source community in Canada?
I think so.
Me, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
How come all these countries have large open source communities, but not here?
We have a lot of people that are into open source, but we're a big country, have a lot of people. It's spread out, but Canada's a big country, too. It's spread out as well.
Well, it is indeed.
But there's a lot of forest that nobody lives in.
you get outside of Ontario, man, and it's woods.
What is that sound?
I don't know.
Which sound are you referring to?
What are you hearing, buzzing?
No, I keep hearing saying, you know, next, available next on DVD or something.
Oh, my God.
That definitely isn't coming from this end.
I think that's Skype lead over.
It could be. That's funny.
That is just bizarre.
I thought I heard whispering there before. It's, like, very low in the background. I thought I heard that, but I figured it was just, like, the whiskey talking or something.
They're doing a...
Marcel's tapped into the hotel, the hotel DVD network over there or something. So that's where you're getting your bandwidth from, right?
I have no idea.
That's how Skype's making their money now. They interject like subliminal messages.
Sometimes
they get a little too loud. And that's what happens.
I just desire to go out and buy a DVD now.
That's right. That's it.
So I think X-Men 3 is coming out soon. I'll have to go get it.
Yeah, October 3rd.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Marcel, I want to thank you for coming on tonight.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
It's been great.
Marcel, you're always welcome to come on this show. You don't have to pre-announce it.
It's not
if
like
you just want to pop on and rant for like 5 minutes, you're more than welcome
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
Well, you have to actually invite me, though. You know?
you're a very busy guy. We know that.
If you say, Marcel, come on at this time, then I'll try to make it a point of showing up. But...
We'll do that every week from now on.
There you go.
Marcel, come on.
We'll have it.
We'll just say, you know, we'll send an email. Get on here, Marcel, and then
you're going to be our Doc Searles.
That's right.
Yeah, where's Marcel today? Hold on a minute.
Sure. Marcel, I'm flying in a jet plane, 400 miles above.
Is it
coming?
What's the weather like over there?
Well, it was raining.
We love Doc Searles.
Yeah.
That was great. That was the best part of the whole damn show.
Well, you know, I want to thank you very much. And
thank you.
Keep doing a great job.
Yeah, Marcel, thanks a lot.
We appreciate it.
You know, we're really in anticipation of your next book over here. So keep going.
Well, thank you.
It's good stuff. And everybody that's listening, you know, if you don't have all of Marcel's books, boy, you really should, because he knows his stuff.
Yeah. You know, Alan might not appreciate you, but the rest of us do.
That's right.
Oh, shut up.
You know, piss on him anyway, right?
Okay, then.
Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you next time, man. You keep doing great.
Thanks, Marcel.
Good luck with the house.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
You guys take care, and I promise that entry will be there on the website tomorrow.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Good night.
And there you have it. That was Marcel.
Marcel was very patient with us with the line dropping so many times.
Marcel's a good guest to have on. And that's probably why we keep having him on, you know?
He completely forgot about the John Watson 100 episode.
Yeah. That's what it was. Everybody forgets about us.
When Kelly Penguin Girls
Talking.
Are we
still broadcasting?
We forget. Yeah, we're still on. Yeah.
We're still...
Connection's
okay.
Good.
We have what's-his-name coming on.
Greg's coming on.
Right, well, before that happens, let me say a few bits and pieces here that I have notes
bits and pieces?
On. Bits and pieces. Bits and pieces. I wanted to say a public thank you... First day of my new tongue. I want to say a public thank you to Christopher Bingman, who... sent us an astoundingly large, in my opinion, contribution to help us along with the tech
show. Thank you, Christopher.
That was most cool. Also, quick shout out to John Campbell from Sydney, Australia. Writes me, says he's a fan of the show, you know, always checks out our weblogs to see what's going on. And he actually... wrote me, also gave you some help with Trixbox that I've been having problems with.
I wanted to publicly thank... Just shut up. I wanted to publicly thank the mirrors, like all you people who are you know, doing mirrors for us, because, you know, we really appreciate all the help you're giving. And it's David Wing from Penguin Way, Simon Mickelson from Denmark, Jeff Ratliff from jeffratliff.org, also known as Gomer. David McDonald from Canadian Techie, Cody Swanson from sysop.ca, David Cantrell from barnyard.co.uk, Jay Suzanka from jms.dnsalias.org, and Jeremy, of course, who we
Hold on a second. Pat, that's where we have the admin at IRC, because I can't understand what you're saying.
Jeremy from linuxquestions.org, our buddy Jeremy, also donates the bandwidth. Those people are the cool people. I'm telling you right now.
It's not loud for me, Pat.
You must have bumped my headphones.
What?
It's really loud for me.
Turn his headphones down.
Thank you. That's good. That's good.
Because everything's still right.
You know what? That's just like the whole thing with the guests. I don't do a damn thing, and they think it's better.
I know. You're like, Dan's like, hold on a second. Let me adjust the volume levels.
And he just stands there.
Is that better?
And they're like, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. That fixes it every time.
Most of the time, you don't need to do anything.
Sweet. I don't know. If we start up Asterisk, will it bring down the whole freaking show again?
I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if it's Asterisk.
He's trying to jump into the call.
He's going to jump into the
room, yeah.
Okay.
On the Asterisk box.
Yes. I wanted to do a shout out to Trolls. It was his 18th birthday the other day. Happy birthday, Trolls.
Hey, happy birthday.
Have a beer for us.
You're
have
a man
now. Get the out of here.
Beep.
You're a man. Get out of your parents' basement.
Oh, that's not nice.
Get out.
Bastard.
Yeah, that's what you get for your 18th birthday in the United States. They give you a suitcase. Suitcase and a bus ticket.
My parents did kick me out. They started charging me rent, though.
Oh, man.
I went to college.
Oh. Yeah, I did, too. They asked me not to come back.
Hello?
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 Awesome. You're in.
It works.
It works.
We had it down for a little bit because we were having some issues, and we didn't know if it was, you know, what it was going on, so we apologize.
Greg, how you doing?
I feel like complete crap, but I'm doing okay.
We've got Greg Bonline. Is that how you pronounce the last name? Bonline?
However the hell you want to pronounce it. It's Bainline, but...
Bainline. Greg Bainline from the Ohio Linux Fest. Greg, we're really looking forward to this weekend.
Now, are you under the weather?
I can't wait to come out and party with you guys at the Barley House.
Oh, yeah.
Are you under the weather, or are you just stressed out, you know, and maxed out?
Oh, I'm both. I'm under the weather quite a bit, actually. I've been sick since about Friday, so I'm hoping that I can beat it before this Friday comes along, because we've got a lot of stuff planned, so.
Now, are you actually going to be at Barley's on Friday night?
I am definitely going to try to make it out there just to have a cold frosty and say hello.
No, that's Wendy's, not Barley's.
A cold frosty one.
Yeah. Hey, Wendy's has got vanilla frosties now.
Yeah, I heard about
that. Dude, they've had frosties for like ever, and it took them this long to get a vanilla frosty.
They had to wait for Dave to die.
So Greg, we had Joe on last weekend. We definitely missed you. He pretty much talked quite a bit about the Ohio Linux Fest. I know you've been involved since the beginning, right?
Actually, Mike Meffey started this whole thing off in, I think we were trying to figure out the history. It was about 2003. And the first Ohio Linux Fest I only came to as an attendee, but I was kind of like, I wonder what's going on here. And then we all got together after that Linux Fest and had dinner the evening after. And at that point, it really was just sort of an idea. And 200 people registered, 100 people showed up. So I've sort of seen it come from infancy to where it's at today, which is we're all kind of blown away at what Linux Fest is become and what it will become in the future. But
absolutely, where you know it's our hope that I know you guys have an occupancy, maximum occupancy of 2,000 people this year, right?
The fire code for the rooms that we have, mm-hmm. The ballrooms, state that the maximum number of persons, I don't know if that's natural persons or live persons, but the maximum number of people is a little under 2,000. I think it's 1,986.
I hope this is a real blowout.
I think we're going to hit that, man.
Yeah, I hope it's a real blowout, and next year we have to get someplace bigger, you know?
Well, I was actually, if you want to check it out, we've got graphs online that show the actual registration and all that. It's at penguin.ohiolinux.org/graphs. I'll state that again slowly.
We're all going right now.
Is that grass? Penguins, man. And grass.
penguin.ohiolinux.org/graphs. And if you take a look at that, you'll see what the registrations look like, the total number and all that. Just sort of an interesting, this is updated hourly for us so we can find out what the hell's going on.
You know, I've been looking at the Ohio Fest website. And, you know, hearing everybody talk about it, and part of me is kind of bummed that I'm going to be in a booth there, because there seems to be such a whole lot of fascinating things and talks and wonderful stuff going on. I have this really big buildup in my mind, and I'm sure I'm not going to be disappointed. And I'm saying to myself, you know, next year, there probably isn't going to be a Linux Fest for us. It's going to be an Ohio Fest.
Well, we're already starting to figure out what we're going to be doing for next year, and I believe that if everything goes well, we should have the place nailed down. And I think you guys will be the first to hear it, but I believe that it will be. Let me find out here for sure. I don't want to.
While you're finding out, what was that URL again? penguin.ohiolinux.org/graphs?
penguin.ohiolinux.org/graphs, G-R-A-P-H-S. That's a directory, actually, so if you put a trailing slash on that.
We're getting feedback, and
there we
looking
go.
Here.
You needed the slash for the directory.
Oh, slash.
Yeah.
Ha-ha-ha, there we go.
If you want to take a look through that, there's some interesting stuff in there. The total number of registrations is with VIPs, the VIPs being the speakers and all that. The total is 1,604, which actually is the highest that we've ever achieved.
I see a real dramatic spike in the registrations right after we told everybody that we were coming.
That's what that huge climb is. Actually, if you look at that red graph, the first one the first one, like right before the ninth, is /dot, followed by our Dig Fest, followed by I don't really know what happened. I think Mike did a post announcement saying, "Hey, we're getting ready to close the all conference registrations." So there's those three little slopes there, those three events. It's kind of interesting. I'll be able to at the end of this, when we actually take the web statistics, we'll be able to find out the top referrers and all that, and find out how people came to us. And there is some basic information up there now, but it's not updated on a regular basis. But it's cool stuff. It's fun. I mean, it's a way for us to use Linux to demonstrate some neat things. So
we've got some fantastic talks. We have some BOFs, you know, Birds of a Feather sessions. We have some meetups. Mm-hmm. What else do we have?
That's a real good overview of what it's about. I think that the most important thing that I can stress is that Ohio Linux Fest is about the community.
Yeah.
It's about what the people that are attending want to make it. So the Birds of a Feather sessions, if you feel that you have a topic, I would encourage you to hop on over to our forums, which you can get to off of our main website at www.ohiolinux.org. Click on the link that says forum, and just post yourself up there for a BOF. And you know, if people are interested, they'll come and join you. We're gonna going to take the room that we're using for lunch this year, which is something new, and just sort of use it for the rest of the day for whatever the heck people want to do with it. So yeah, birds of a feather I think are really important because the community can make or break whatever they'd like to in that case. Obviously the speaker lineup is just, you know, when I found out what Richard and the others had done, Joe from the speaker committee, I was kind of like floored. I was like, wow, we've never had this many just, I would say, visionary people in the room at one given time. And I think that you know, in particular that they did a fantastic job this year, both
oh, you killed it, man.
Did it die? Oh, man.
Dan rips one and the asterisk box die. And he
well, they don't call it an asterisk box for nothing.
He kills the DSL modem from 6 feet
crack,
away.
Pow, it's gone. Right in the middle of Greg talking.
What the
hell?
It has nothing to do with the switch, Dan.
It's Dan's ass.
You're slowly like...
Don't close the door. You'll kill us all. What the hell are you doing?
Dan's farts have slowly like eaten away the circuit board.
What the hell, man?
It smells awful.
Thank God my head is stuffed up. I can't smell a thing.
It smells real bad, dude.
I can't smell a thing, and I'm thankful for it.
Oh,
is the server down too? Is that what the deal is? I don't see anybody talking on the chat.
The internet connection's down.
Damn,
no,
man.
It's not the internet connection this time. It's the freaking server.
The server is down?
What, the asterisk server?
No, the server. The damn server right here.
What about it?
What the hell happened?
The asterisk server?
No, it just I don't know what happened.
Because I got no chat either, you know? Like,
it just
you farted and you killed it.
Yeah, it's down.
It was the last straw.
Type something in the chat room.
It's dead, I think.
Do it anyway. Somebody type something.
Oh, my God.
Something, anything.
What the hell? That was, like, perfect timing, though, too.
Something. Something was typed.
Nothing.
What?
Uh-oh, Dan's ripping out the cables. His head's going to explode.
And on top of that, he's ripping out a gamepad for it. I'll fix it with the Nintendo pad, damn it.
No, I gotta say, what the hell just happened there?
Easy, Dan.
Oh, what a show. What a show.
Are we dead in the water?
It would seem to be.
At least we're still recording.
Are we still recording? Now that's the question of the hour right there.
Dan's compile just finished.
Are
so
we still?
It might be still.
Dan's compile just finished.
I have to admit, Dan's been pretty good about this lately. Dan hasn't done any like online configuration.
The trouble was he?
Yeah, he hasn't like modified the configuration files for the desktop. He's using the record to show on while the show's going on.
Yeah, well, he was just thinking he was updating his desktop here. He was actually rebooting the server.
That's right.
Nah, he's been pretty good about it, man.
No, wait, let me reboot the Astro server. Oh, no, that was the LinuxLink.net.
There goes the bulletin board.
No, I mean, look at this. It's like...
man. Your switch is dead.
The switch is dead?
Dum, yeah. Dum, dum.
Yep. Who pulled the power off the switch?
I didn't touch it, man.
The power is off the switch?
The switch isn't lit up at all, man. It's like completely dark. His modem looks okay.
That's because it's not doing anything right now.
Oh my God!
What?
This can't be correct. You gotta be kidding me. Pat's chair knocked the switch out. Pat's chair knocked the switch out. Oh, Pat.
Now we're in business. Oh my God, everyone's coming back now. Holy shit. That's too funny.
It's hilarious.
Dan is like blowing a gasket here. Oh my God.
I'm going to go relieve myself.
Yeah, you better.
Dum 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 dum. Tell me we're still recording, Dan.
We can go still.
No, we're still recording.
Yeah, we're still.
All right. We're still recording.
Looks like a late night.
Switch is back up. We're still recording. Pat is going to go relieve himself on the switch or something like that. He already pissed on the modem. See that? You give these guys a little whiskey, you know, a man drink, and look how they behave.
The whole place
good as that. Yeah, jeez. You know not the boy. You and Dan's a cheap date, man. A little two fingers of whiskey, he's wide open for anything, you know? What a slut.
Two fingers, he's killed the machine. He's killed the show. His farts have blasted off the server.
Now that's scary right there. Boom! Everything goes down.
Pat's murdering the switch. God.
Are we back up on IRC yet?
We should be back up on IRC.
You see me typing stuff there, Alan?
Yeah, you're typing stuff.
All right. Well, we're all on IRC. See if anybody else joins back up.
Is our guest back on?
We'll still
is our guest back on?
Still doing our stuff. I you would have to.
Oh boy!
You have to like log in and see.
Oh, this ain't my headphones.
Dan is losing it.
Hello.
Dan, don't stress.
Hello. Hello.
Everyone's coming back on.
Greg.
Hello.
Greg, are you there?
I think the connection's down, Dan. Look.
Greg.
I think so, too, because I can't get on my server.
People
at home.
Dropping off the server.
Everyone has dropped off the server.
This has been like a really fucked up night. You see everybody dropping off the server.
Yeah, I can't ping anybody yet.
Connection's
down.
The connection's down.
I got nothing.
Dan's going to have to go in and edit out some dead spaces. Everybody's just dropping. Yeah, it's all dead.
Nope. Godzilla's come back on.
We're coming back. We're coming back.
Yeah, there we go.
It's back.
Slowly everyone's popping back on again.
What a series of calamities, man. It's been like, you know, the connection's been dropping off the internet. I freaking bumped the freaking power switch to the switch. Holy crap. So what else has been going on this week, fellas, while we're waiting to get everybody back online? So, Link, you did a Samba install last week?
I did, but I didn't really do any more of it, like, yet this week because my drives didn't come in yet. The guy sent them from Texas. My friend sent them from Texas. And I haven't even had a chance to ask him how he sent it yet. Probably, like, USPS
or
something.
This is at home? You did this?
Yeah.
Why did you want to do Samba? Why didn't you just do like NFS or like...
Well, because I already have an NFS server. And Samba, I think, is actually at the point now where it's working better than some of the, than like NFS V3 or V4 or whatever the hell it is there. You know, the slightly older version of NFS. And I use it at work, Samba at work, and it's just it's a nice thing to do. So I decided I would do it at home and play with it there.
You there, Greg?
Greg? Don't hear anybody, buddy.
We're okay. He probably hasn't jumped back in.
He might not have called back in. He might still be trying. But, so I set one up at home, and after I set that up, and, you know, it's just on a small drive. It's on a 40-gig drive, right? So I set it up at home, and I've been playing with it a little bit. And I thought, you know, what a nice thing to do would be to help myself out with it a little bit and give a test try of mirroring the Arch Linux repositories.
Yeah, I saw that. You talked to Judd Van Ness.
Yeah, I emailed Judd, and I'm doing current and extra right now.
How big is that?
When I left today, it was like a little over 5 gigs. I expect it to be...
That's pretty big.
Eight to ten, maybe, or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah?
But I'll find out when it gets done. But, you know, I set that up, and there really wasn't a whole lot of information, so I put some information in, for people who want to do that on my weblog. You have to set it up for anonymous FTP, too. I think I forgot to put that on there. But I'm going to see how it works, and if it does work at all, it would be really, really nice locally for me to do, you know, computers with Arch on them or something like that, because I don't have to, you know, it won't take so long for me to download stuff.
So if I'm running Arch, can I hit your server to get, like, all the updates?
No, because it's internal right now.
Oh, you suck.
Well, if it works, you know, I'm considering sticking it on the on my linkgeek.org site.
Don't do it if it works. Don't do it.
So,
don't do it. You'll kill your bandwidth.
Become a mirror.
It's not my bandwidth.
Whose bandwidth is it?
It's bandwidth that I'm paying for with the whole hosting package.
Oh.
So, and since we have a little extra to spare
now. So he's complaining. We do?
Yeah, we
do. He's complaining that we don't have any bandwidth.
The mirror PHP thing that I did for the downloads, that's working really, really well. We went a couple of weeks into everything, and we were doing almost 400 gigs, and now we're at, you know, almost 500 at 3 weeks now. So
that'll work dramatically
with the new mirror stuff.
Hey, you know what happened? Nobody from iTunes could get it, so you lost about almost 50% of the traffic.
Yeah, what happened there?
And but it did come back after to somebody else.
iTunes is stupid. That's
no, it didn't come back because it's on a different server now.
Well, the iTunes feed came back because I know I got 158 last week's show.
No, you did, but iTunes is coming off of a different server, not affiliated at all with his.
Yep. You think they would fix that, right? Like, why the hell can't they write a podcatching client that knows how to do a simple redirect? This is not a real complicated thing, right? You hit the URL, it redirects to a URL that has the file name. That's all it is. It's nothing like real weird or, you know, like wget. It works really good with wget. So anything that's based off of that, the Linux command line clients and stuff like that work great. The only two that I've heard of that have any problems is iTunes, of course, and Amarok.
Okay.
Is the other one, which actually downloads the show, but instead of calling it an MP3 file, it calls it a PHP file, so you have to rename it.
Now, I have a question. If half the people who listen to the show are listening to on iTunes, are they Windows users or Apple users?
See, I don't buy that for a second. I don't buy it for a second that half of the people listening to the show are listening through iTunes. Because the show stats I was looking at, I saw on the shows where they could still get them, I saw maybe 1,000 hits from iTunes, 1,000 directs from iTunes, and like 9,000 from everybody else.
I would think,
kind of thing. So I don't think that there are that many people that are dropping. And you know, they ought to be smart enough to.
I would think if we got some Linux people, they're using a Linux client to download the show?
No, because I downloaded it off my Mac and put it on my Nano. Well, along with all the other...
you and the rest of the Apple freaks.
No, it just happens to be the easiest way.
We won't know actual statistics from FeedBurner for about another week or so, but apparently the iTunes feed has 733 subscribers, which is
would be about the 1,000 that Link was talking about.
Right. It is a significant number. Now, according to the feed burner, if you take there's 1,000 non iTunes feed subscribers for the MT3 feed, and so we're looking at 1,754 subscribers total for the MP3 feed, and another 395. So we're looking at about 2,100.
That means there's a whole lot of people out there that just hit the website
that
download from the website.
They use some kind of podcatcher that use the feed burner feed.
Everything uses the feed burner feed. The RSS. has the feed burner feed in.
Well, that's what I mean. If it's using a podcatcher, using the feed burner feed. But this does not count people downloading directly from the website.
Right.
It's still a far cry from the 150 million that Twit has.
Yeah, well, you know, such is life.
Oh, well.
They have a budget, too.
You know, they got Visa as their sponsor.
Yeah, they have a budget, man. We don't have it. Cut that out.
John Watson has a sponsor every week.
Frickin' Cool Lasers or something?
Not frickin' Cool Lasers.
Wicked Cool Lasers.
Oh, good fan, man.
I've seen some of those. I got to get me one. I need to get a laser that, like, pops balloons and shit.
I want a laser that's going to freaking melt a hole through a freaking 3-inch thick place piece of, you know, steel reinforcement.
I'll set it for one.
Shut Pat the hell up.
I'll set it for one that lights a cigar, so.
Or lights Dan's farts on fire.
Now that would be funny.
That would be cool.
That would be funny.
Burn him in the back. Greg.
Hello?
Oh, no. I see Greg on the RSC. Let me see if he's going to call back in.
I just dialed into the chat.
Okay.
I quit. I didn't want to tell you guys in Ohio. I want to tell you now. I quit.
I've had enough.
You can never leave.
I'm done.
Dan's leaving. He's going to Virginia. Good night.
I'm leaving now.
He's coming back in.
You know what else I've been playing with lately? Last couple of days, SQ Lite.
How do you like it?
I think it's pretty neat.
What are you using it for exactly?
Nothing. I've been playing with it.
Creating databases,
yeah,
populating.
I've just been playing with it, you know, pissing around with it. But I can see where I could develop some really, really cool bash scripts that use that as a database back end. Which brings me to, you know, maybe a branch or an update of Bash Potter. You know, because everybody bitches, doesn't do file name or something like that. And I could fix a lot of things if I actually pumped all that shit into a database and used
But then it's going to ruin its cross-platform capability.
Well, not necessarily, because SQLite runs on a lot of things.
Then they have to download SQLite.
They would. It would have to be, well, like I said, I have to have a branch or a fork or something like that, but.
I disagree.
I don't give a fuck.
And with that?
No.
Greg's having problems connecting in.
Oh, man. Dude, look at the. This is. Look at this here. Folks, I know you can't see what I'm talking about. Right now, I'm showing Dan a chart. I updated our. One of the scripts today.
Hello.
And there we go.
There we go. Okay.
Sorry about that, Greg. That was Pat's fault. Not mine.
Uh-huh.
Pat's this time.
I take
well, obviously, you guys are running Asterisk because Allison was telling me about an invalid extension.
That's it. Yep.
That's cool. Well, let me know if you need any help with that.
Yeah, there's going to be an Asterisk buff, isn't there?
You know what? We have two people that need help with Asterisks right over here. We call them Link and Alan.
I'd be happy to offer it if you. I do a lot with Digium, so in fact that's why I'm I'm probably one of the guys that I've beat on Mark and Kevin and those guys enough to get them to come to Linux Fest for the past 2 years. So
well, here's an
Digium
asterisk,
will be there.
Here's an asterisk question for you: when you set up an asterisk box, how do you set it up? Do you use like Trixbox, which is one of the, you know, all-in-one distribution kind of things that does everything? Or do you set it up on a specific distribution of Linux? And
that's a really interesting question. There's actually, I do Asterisk all day, every day, in and out. In fact, we do millions and millions of minutes with Asterisk. And it really depends on the clients and what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, at home, what I'm talking to you now is the Ast Linux distribution, which is running on a Socris Net 4801, and you can check that out at astlinux.org. at work, when we're doing our production TDM gateways, we're running CentOS 4.4 on dual core boxes. And when I'm doing commercial rollouts for customers, depending on what their need, if they have a small PBX, I'll use a commercial product such as SwitchFox or Finality. And if they are looking for a low-cost alternative for a PBX, I'll use TrixBox as well. So it really depends on what the client wants. The great thing about Asterisk is that you've got so many different options.
What do you recommend for a general home user? What's your personal preference? Is it Ask Linux or TrixBox? I mean, it's probably Ask Linux because that's what you're running.
Hold off because Microsoft Exchange is going to have VoIP capabilities.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'll get right on that one. Really, I would say if you're comfortable with a specific distribution, whether it be Debian or Gentoo or CentOS, then and you have a box that's running, you should choose whatever, you should make it run on that. However, if you're looking to build to get into something easy, TrixBox is certainly an easy way to do that. They've done a fantastic job of wrapping that together. And it has an awful lot of features. If you're looking for something very simple, Ask Linux is great. Just to get started, you can basically download it, run it off completely off of a CD. So use a CD and then create Christian built this concept of key disks with it, so you can actually put a floppy in and store your config files on a floppy. And so you don't even need a hard drive in your box if you want to start playing with it. But any of the things out there, TrixBox is, I think TrixBox is probably the most popular.
You know what I want? I'm going to tell you what I want. I want coherent documentation.
Good luck.
Yeah, that's
I'll
what
tell
I
you mean. What I want. I want the SIP stack and the core to be able to handle more than 230 concurrent calls without crapping itself. But I'm part of the development team for Asterisk, so we've got 1.4, which is actually at beta 2 right now. And Josh Culp from Digium, who's now working for Digium, known as File on IRC, has put in point-to-point RTP bridging, which is a nice scalability increase for it. And there's lots and lots and lots of fixes in 1.4 beta 2, so we need everybody's help to go download that, beat the crap out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? That's the point right there regarding documentation. Because I think that, you know, when we set up Asterisk at home, about, what, a year and a half ago?
Right.
It wasn't, you know, we had some difficulty finding, you know, the documentation on the version of Asterisk we were using, what it came with, and doing some of the stuff we wanted to do. And then they moved to TrixBox, and all of a sudden, like, the documentation, it's just like they said, screw it, and threw it out the window. And, you know, it was, you know, having gone through the process of setting up, you know, some of this stuff under Asterisk and editing the config files, it was, you know, I didn't spend a day or 3 days doing it this time. It was like, you know, it took me about an hour and a half to get back to where it was. But it just seems like, you know, the documentation is just not kept pace in any way with the versions of Asterisk or the changes of Asterisk.
That's a common complaint, not only for Asterisk, but just about every open source project out there, as I'm sure everybody's well aware of. If you want a good reference to Asterisk, O'Reilly has a book called The Future of Telephony, Asterisk, The Future of Telephony, which was written by Jim Van Meglen, Jared Smith, and Leif Madsen. I happen to be holding one in my hand because it's an invaluable guide that I have sitting next to my PC, and it does not leave from the side there. Now, it was primarily written for Asterisk 1.0, but it has lots of it was written also around the time that 1.2 was coming out, so there's several sections in there that are related to that that have information. Now, with 1.4 coming out, I do know that there is in the works an Asterisk tips and tricks book, and there's also an additional revision of TFOT on the table. Don't know when that's going to be due. It's probably going to come out several months after 1.4 actually hits the ground to make sure that a lot of the fixes stuff get into it. But there is Doxygen documentation in the core. But again, Asterisk is developed by complete geeks that are, you know, far in excess of the capability of what I am. I'm a very lowly kind of guy on the totem pole there. I do really nothing exciting, but they just don't document anything. So we're all constantly reversing code and saying, well, what does this really do? it's you know, freedom has its price.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing, though. I mean, Asterisk is a phenomenal project, is a awesomely powerful project, and it's all of a sudden brought into, you know, into it made it accessible what telephone companies have been doing for years now. And I'm wondering, is, you know, we complain about the lack of documentation on Asterisk, but is that any different in the commercial world with the telephone or PBX systems they have over there? I mean, are they well documented, or is it like a secret society?
I got to tell you that, quite frankly, if you've ever picked up a Nortel set of documentation for a Nortel PBX or looked at Avaya's documentation, keep in mind they're building for a PBX and a specific interface. They're not building a toolkit.
Right.
Their stuff is not nearly as feature-rich as what Asterisk can do, which is why a lot of what I do is actually bolting Asterisk on top of commercial, shall we say, legacy PBXs. And their documentation is often out of date and incorrect. I would say that the documentation that you get with Asterisk is on par with most of the commercial documentation out there. Now, the caveat being, of course, that Asterisk changes so rapidly because it is open source, that documenting stuff often doesn't track from version to version. You know, a simple example is that in 1.2, the concept of dial plan functions were introduced. So a lot of old applications broke. But the VoIP info wiki, voip-info.org, is pretty much the de facto repository of Asterisk information. So you can basically go there and find all sorts of tips and tricks on getting stuff together. One other point I'd like to make, though, is that Asterisk, the Asterisk book from O'Reilly was specifically written such that it was under the Creative Commons license. So Jim and Jared and Leaf would not agree to write the book unless they could give it away for free online. So if you'd like a free copy of it as a PDF or as an archive, you can go to asteriskdocs.org, asteriskdocs.org, and you'll be able to get a link to it to download a copy of the book. If you like it, buy it, support it. If you don't, well, you know, just use what's out there. But I'll tell you what, you have as much right as anybody else out there and as much ability to document stuff. So we can use your help.
I'm lazy. I get it done, and then I don't want to talk to anybody about it.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
We figure it took us 20 fucking hours to go through and figure out how to get the damn thing to work. Let someone else work for it too. That's what we figure.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you guys want to meet me at Ohio Linux Fest, I'll be happy to talk Asterisk.
Oh man! Oh hell yes! Because my Trix box setup is possessed by the devil.
Well, you could always trash it.
I could
start fresh.
I need to begin with.
He trashes another one to get, and this is where.
It was just, it was interesting because Joe wanted to do a podcast as well for OSDG, and he said, well, the recordings I've been getting have been really horrible. And I said, well, how are you doing? And he said, I've got a microphone plugged into the phone. I'm like, yeah, that's going to sound like crap. So I said, let me do something. So I set up a MeetMe conference that basically uses the Mix Monitor application, records it, drops it as a WAV file into an HTTP directory, and gave him a DID. So basically, he's got a specific phone number he tells his people to call. They call in. They have the conference call, and then he picks that call up out of an HTTP directory. And it's for him, he needs to do, you know, non-real-time editing with it. So it's it works for him. But I don't know. Like I said, Asterisk is really cool and could talk about it all night. I have done on that on several occasions. But
you know, I think we're going to have to take you up on that sometime.
But I do want to ask you a question, right, though. Since it sounds like that you make your living off of supporting Asterisk and Asterisk installations.
Partially, yeah.
Yeah. How is the general populace, businesses and everything, taking the Asterisk when compared to the other, you know, closed commercial offerings that are available out there? I mean, is it really starting to fly?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. One of the common things, one of the things that I do, is I'm a big advocate for open source, and whether that's Linux, or, you know, with Linux Fest, or whether it's Asterisk. Digium has on occasion flown me around to actually talk about Asterisk. In fact, I'm going to be at AsterCon doing two tracks this year in Dallas. And the first one is just the basic introduction, which I'd be happy to do for anybody who is interested in it. The second one is more of a guide for people that are looking to implement Asterisk on how to sell it. Because one of the interesting things about geeks, and including myself in that, is that we love the features. We love everything that it can do. We try to sell on those features to our customers, and our customers just sort of look at us with these blank stares and go, what are you talking about? So one of the things that I've tried to do, one of the things that I learned from years of trying to sell Linux, I started trying to sell Linux solutions to people in 95. So I learned right off the bat that trying to sell Linux on its name doesn't sell anything. So I don't tell people about Asterisk when I'm selling them something or when I'm talking to customers. I basically say, what are your feature needs? Go down and make a list and say, I've got two options for that. One is $1,800 a phone, and the other is going to be approximately $900 a phone. And when they ask what the difference is, the difference is, well, the one that's $900 a phone is using open source telephony, and it's using at its core a project called Asterisk. And usually they don't, that's about the end of the discussion with them. They don't care. What they care about is, does it work? Can you support it? You know, is it reliable? And the answer to all three of those is yeah. Yeah. So, you know, quite frankly, we've been very successful at getting Asterisk in as a replacement for a legacy PBX or as an adjunct to it. For example, if somebody has a Nortel system and they want to do voicemail, well, adding a Nortel voicemail system on top of a legacy Nortel box is a fairly expensive and complicated process that requires a Nortel certified engineer to do it the right way. Well, we can basically stick an Asterisk box right in front of the darn thing and handle all their voicemail and do it seamlessly. And oh, by the way, we've added the ability to do SIP calls, so it's good stuff.
Greg, you make your living off of this stuff?
Yeah, actually, I do. I would love to say that it's the only thing that I do, but it's a part of it. It's probably the most fun thing that I'm doing now. But I do a lot of. I run a company called N2Net in Cleveland, which does mission critical hosting. And one of the things that we do is mission critical hosting of voice applications. And Asterisk is a big part of that. So enough of the commercials, though.
Yeah,
this is good stuff.
No. I mean, you guys, some really good stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, we're gonna hopefully run into you, and you know, maybe you'll stop by our booth, and we can get some more. Words from you.
Absolutely. Like I said, I will be there. I will be there on Friday. I'm actually leaving tomorrow night. Myself and Beth Lynn will be down there.
Where are you? In the Pittsburgh area, or
is in Cleveland?
I'm in Cleveland, okay. And she's in Pittsburgh. Yeah, she's Beth. I have to say this. Beth has been doing an absolutely fantastic job this year, and she's probably going to look like a zombie on Friday. You guys asked before if we were stressed out. Yeah. The last week before Linux Fest is one of those times when you get very little sleep, and you're constantly wondering what the hell is going to go wrong next. Like our passes will not actually be there until possibly 9 a.m. you know, the time registration, the time the keynote starts, our actual passes for the event will be showing up. And it's just, it's an amazing thing that we actually are able to pull the event off, because the organization of the event is done in a very much open source manner. I mean, people have responsibilities, they do their jobs, but people are doing the things that they're best at, and in some cases it's chaotic like an open source project. And I think that's one of the things that really attracts me to Linux Fest in the first place, is that it's just such a rush to actually see the doors finally open and see 700 people walk in the door. We expect we'll probably have very close to 1,000 people through the doors. I mentioned that we had over 1,600 registered. We generally see about a 50% no-show rate. So I think we'll have a better rate this year, because we actually made, you know, we gave people the option of paying to come if they wanted to support the conference, which, believe it or not, actually saved a good portion of what we wanted to do, because they didn't quite meet all of our sponsorship goals in the time frame we wanted to. But you know, so it's very much community supported this year. In fact, 1/3 of our budget is coming from the community, which is just absolutely fantastic and mind boggling.
Do you need any volunteers in any specific areas?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure if Joe went over the schedule. It's a lot more finalized now. On Friday, early on, there's LPI testing if you registered for the All Conference Pass, if you want to become certified through the Linux Professional Institute. From 12 to 4, we have pretty much a down and dirty, what's going to be happening in the next 36 hours kind of meeting, where we'll be signing up volunteers and designating some responsibilities for people, types of volunteer jobs that are available. For example, we always need help manning the registration lines. Mm-hmm. We need people to be runners, to go run back and forth and find other people and let them know. We occasionally need people that are good at crimping Cat 5, because build the show network in an hour. Huh. We need people that are willing to introduce speakers. That's a big job, and I think most of those are filled. But it's a great opportunity to get up close and personal with some of the speakers. But there's a lot of jobs that we need help for. Last year we had about 60 people that volunteered to help in various positions. And it always floors me how many people come out of the woodwork, because we're always thinking to ourselves in the last couple of days, how the hell are we going to get all this done? And we just sort of trust that the community will help support it, because really it is the community show. It's not owned by anybody. So.
And in the past, I trust the community has come, stepped up to the plate.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's what's important.
So if anybody is interested in volunteering, you can go to the forums, and there is a link up there on our website for forum. It's www.ohiolinux.org. And click on the link for forum, and you will find a topic in there for volunteers. And you can go in there and add your name to the list.
Well, if you guys want us to introduce anybody, I'm more than willing to go up there and introduce some people.
Absolutely.
I would say that's a possibility.
Hotness.
Yeah. I try to.
Ted Hager.
If you want to find me at the conference, look for the big guy wearing the really awful Hawaiian shirt. That's my trademark.
I think that's half the people who are going to be there.
Is that you or Mad Dog?
It's kind of a competition. What was his name? Scott from the Mozilla Project, Scott Collins. The first year, he was one of the bigger speakers at Linux Fest, and he wore this just god-awful pair of jams and this crazy Hawaiian shirt. And I talked to him afterward, and I said, I have a shirt that just will put that to shame. And he said, bring it on. So Man. Every year I've been wearing an uglier and uglier shirt.
I haven't heard of Jam since I was back in middle school.
Yeah. And he did an amazing talk that first year.
Yeah.
He talked about how attention deficit disorder has helped him program. And I said, it was just it had me laughing. He's such a great speaker. But, yeah, this year is, some of the things that I think I'm really looking forward to this year is I want to see Chris DeBona talk about Google, because from what I understand about Google's infrastructure, they have so many thousands of PCs in their data centers that from a cost recovery perspective, they just pull them out, throw them out. Something breaks or a node goes down, they don't even fix them. They just pull them out, throw them in the trash, and go slap another box in, write down its MAC address and turn it on and boot. And that just amazes me. So many different machines. And in a while, like, almost everything for Google is supposedly running out of RAM, too. Each machine's got 16 gigs of RAM and just loads an image in and does some crazy shit.
You hear these rumors that they're looking at Open Solaris.
Google might be looking at Open Solaris?
Yeah, that's what they say.
Well, Sun will actually be there, so I'm kind of interested to see if they're going to promote Open Solaris at the show.
This week they love Linux.
Next they
week,
will be there.
Next week they're going to hate Linux. The week after that they're going to love Linux.
I think one of the things that kind of bummed me out about Sun was, guys remember the old Cobalt cubes and racks?
Oh yeah.
Those were awesome.
I love those boxes. And I was around when those guys started out of a garage in Silicon Valley. In fact, I did a lot of work on bringing over Red Hat 5.2. They had a Red Hat 4-based distribution for those MIPS boxes. And I did a whole, like, almost 97% of the port of Red Hat 5.2 to it. And we had a crazy, crazy, crazy archive of packages up. But what kind of pissed me off about Sun was they bought that product. They bought the entire company. They bought Cobalt. And then they just let it languish, and then it just died. Now, the best thing that those engineers at Cobalt did was they got Sun to release all that code as open source. So are you guys familiar with Blue Quartz?
No.
Blue Quartz is the open source version of the Cobalt stuff. So if you want to basically take a regular PC now, you can go to Blue Quartz. You can get a Blue Quartz CD, download it, and throw it on a regular box. It's based on CentOS with a 2.6 kernel, and it basically gives you the Cobalt, the Rack 550 interface. So if you love those boxes and you love the interface on them, you can basically get it for free. Go to newonce.org. N-U-O-N. Let's see. Wait. Let me learn how to spell again. www.newonce.com or .org. Let me bring it up. It's N-U-O-N-C-E.
Well, one thing that Joe didn't mention last week is he has a podcast now over on linux.com every week. They're short, like 10
minutes.
Yeah,
that was...
Have you guys listened to those at all?
I listened to one of them, but I haven't heard the whole... I haven't had a chance to really... newonce.net, that's what it is. I haven't had a chance to really dig into them and listen to them. He had one about Linux Terminal Server Project, I believe.
Right, and then MySQL, I think, was the other one.
Cool. Yeah, www.newonce.net. There's a link over on the right to the CentOS Blue Quartz installer. Basically, it's an ISO that you download, and it's free.
Awesome.
And we actually moved about 6 or 7 Cobalt rack units over to a single massive Blue Quartz box.
Cool.
That's our migration path. Works really well.
Well, we're really
a fountain of useless knowledge.
We're really looking forward to this weekend. I think it's going to be an awesome show. You guys have a ton of great speakers, a lot of great presenters. You know, there's going to be some really good people, you know, manning the booths. We're really looking forward to it. We're really looking forward to meeting everybody who listens. We're really looking forward to meeting you guys. This is our first time out at the Ohio Linux Fest. And we're really psyched to have a really good time and just really enjoy it.
Yeah, I think you guys will have fun. I would definitely, remind people to consider the community aspects of it. You know, a lot of people ask us, are you going to have internet access there? And the simple answer is, we might. There will be a con network that's Wi-Fi. We'll have internal IRC servers running. We will have an internal wiki running as well as a website for the conference. So if you have a laptop and you can get on, you're welcome to use it. There is no guarantee that we will find internet access, but it has been known to happen that at enterprising people will connect various things to the network and find a way to get out to the internet. The real problem is that the Greater Columbus Convention Center wants $5,000 for a single day's worth of internet access, and that's that'd be like a sixth of our budget. So we sort of find a way to get around that if we can. But you didn't hear that from me. You know, I can. As an organizer of the conference, I have no knowledge whatsoever, and I will plausibly deny anything that anybody ever says to me about internet access at the conference. Besides, you're going to a conference to meet people.
Exactly.
Get out of your laptop. You don't need your email.
Nope, it's only a one-day event. It's not like, a five-day event.
That's right.
Leave the laptops at home, come out and just meet people.
Yeah, and don't forget the after party on Saturday. We started doing this 2 years ago, actually, in 2004. We did it just sort of informally. We just said, okay, let's go across town and go to Dave and Buster's, and we did, and people liked it. And then in 2005, we said, well, let's actually see if we can schedule a room to do the after party. And we took a big portion of our budget, we put it towards liquor.
Nice.
And unfortunately, because of the... Yes, yes. But you can for the price of two drink tickets.
It's just Pat and Greg.
He's cheap. So in 2005, we actually had, we had just a ridiculous amount of booze, and only about 350 people showed up for the after party because we didn't publicize it very well. Well, this year, the after party is at the Conference Hotel, which is the Holiday Inn. There's a second one at, there's a second hotel at the Midwest Conference Center. But the main conference hotel is the Holiday Inn, which you can get information once again on the site. But I'll tell you, the guys from Nauticon, I don't know if you've ever heard of Nauticon.
Yeah.
It's a small conference that goes on in Cleveland every year. Uh-huh. And Froggy and Tiger, it was really Paul and Jody, they have the most amazing conference, and they do a little version of that at our after party. They've done it. They had a DJ come in from New York last year. DJ Relativity, I think was his name. Green-haired guy that just spun the most amazing tracks. And it was kind of sad because we had this huge 80,000 square foot room that the convention center gave us at the last minute, and we only had about 350 people in it. I mean, there was a lot of people there, but it just looked so empty because we had so much room. But this year we have the opposite problem. We can have a maximum of 350 people, and if you look at those graphs on that page I showed you before, we have 744 people registered for the after party. That's a lot of people. So I truly believe that the after party is going to be very close to standing room only, but that's where we give away all the really cool stuff. So if you want to, possibly win a Nano, an iPod Nano, or
no, that's all right.
Some other stuff.
You can keep it.
Give away. Yeah, you can keep that iPod.
Superior Apple products, thank you.
Well, there you go. Well, whatever. Hey, it's free, yes. So somebody can win it and put it on eBay, or if you want, just drop it off the top of the hotel. But
we
don't give it away. It's just what our sponsors give us, and they hope to be able to get a little bit of advertising out of it. So we try to support the sponsors because they're supporting us, and we try to keep the sponsors. People that are relevant to the community. Like, one of my operating principles is to make sure that if there's a company that supports open source, I'm going to try to support them, whether I do that in my business or my home world. And same thing goes for the conference. So, you know, there's a lot of vendors that'll be there that are small companies that are using Linux and are supporting the community in a lot of different ways and could use the support of the community. So, good stuff.
Now, the after party is free, but you need to register for that beforehand, right?
No. You can register for it. The number of registers is just so that we can sort of drop our jaws at the end and go, wow. And realistically, if we've got 750 people registered, you know, only half of those are going to show up to the after party. Either that or the Holiday Inn's going to collapse. But you don't need to register for the after party. It's not and it's completely free. If you registered for an all conference pass, you will get drink tickets, which will get you some frosty beverages. I think we've got a couple of kegs and two different bar setups there. So there's also the Holiday Inn has a bar in the center. We basically have the entire Holiday Inn for the after party. We also have an after party, which is the all conference suite, where we've got all sorts of goodies. That's what happens when the party shuts down. That's where we go. Although, I mean, I got to tell you, if people like the party, all I can tell you is that last year, I didn't sleep on Saturday night. I didn't sleep on Sunday morning. I ended up basically back in my room about 7 a.m. We had just found just crazy, crazy things to do. I went out with the guy from KDE, Aaron Saigo. And we actually ended up going out to a bunch of bars around Columbus. And Columbus, Ohio State, on a Saturday night, it's amazing. You want a party? That's the place to be. That is definitely the place to be. Certainly better than downtown Cleveland.
That sucks.
One of you guys is from Columbus, aren't you?
No, yeah, Link.
I used to live in Columbus. Yeah,
that's gonna suck, man. Because I gotta come back and then drive down to Virginia. Oh, I'm gonna be dead.
Life's a bitch.
I have two words for you: late checkout.
There you go.
Yeah, but let's see what else is going on. I mean, I don't know. I mean, everything that you could ever want to know is posted on the website. I would highly suggest people read the FAQ. As far as the after party, just come on over. Even if you didn't go to the conference, come on over. You know, well, we're going to have all sorts of stuff going on there.
Now, do you have to buy drink tickets, or do you just pay at the bar?
To be honest, I believe that you can do both. You can either buy drink tickets beforehand or... or you can pay at the bar. Either way, bring cash. You know, never hurts. And we occasionally pass around a kitty, and our goal is to raise some money for next year so we can get the down payment for the convention center again. But,
cool. Drinks will be on Link this year.
Yeah,
for everybody.
Right. Hey, find me. I'll have a pocket full of those tickets. I may not be able to speak, but you know, I'll still share a drink with you.
Cool.
Sounds
good. Any other questions?
I think we're good, man. We're really looking forward to it. We can't wait to see you guys.
Excellent. Well, I'll run into you guys hopefully at the Barley House unless something crazy goes down.
See you in 48 hours.
That's right.
All right.
I appreciate it.
That's all that there is.
Let the good times roll.
Yeah. We look forward to seeing you, Greg. Because I know you're going to get ambushed with Chris Christmas.
Yeah, I'm sure. Everyone that wants to buy me to ask me an asterisk question, though, it's required to buy me a beer, so...
I want to be the first in line then so I can get a straight answer.
Link's going to get you a case.
You'll be done by the time. You'll be sloshed by the time I'm done. I tell you.
Yeah. Oh, we did finally get confirmation from the zoo on the penguins. They're bringing two penguins.
Awesome.
There will be two live penguins there from like 6 to 6:30. And they'll be doing, we're going to give them 15 minutes to go up there and talk about the penguins. There's a girl penguin and a boy penguin. I think that's on the schedule. Yeah, that is on the schedule. I think we did a PR thing about it. But, that was one of the things I said. I said last year, I said, in a state of drunken joy, I said, we have to have live penguins. And I'm so excited that the zoo actually agreed to do that.
That's really cool.
We got some animal rights activists that called us and said, it's not too late. You don't have to drop the penguins out. Like, you know, hey, there's money that we're giving the zoo. It's going to make their lives much better.
Seriously.
They're
going
to get fish for the next month. So.
The hell with them.
Everybody has a right to their opinion.
Yeah, pita is only good on a sandwich.
People eating tasty animals?
That's right. There you go. If they didn't want me to eat animals, guys, they shouldn't have made them out of meat. That's all I got to say.
Well, thanks a lot, Greg. I appreciate you coming
on. No problem.
I want you to get some rest and, build up that immune system there so that you're good to go Friday night.
We'll do that. We'll do that. Thanks, guys. And
yes,
I appreciate the
thanks for coming on. It was great having you on.
Thanks for putting up with the technical difficulties.
Yeah.
That's all right. It's all right. I know the drill. I've been down that road myself.
All right. We'll see you Friday.
All right, guys.
Good night.
Good night.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, Dan, play us out.
Alan's like, I don't think dozing off here.
No, I was actually reading on the VOIP site there. I was actually reading up on that. Well, yeah, I am sort of dazing right now either way, but...
So what do you think?
Dude, I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
We should get at least one episode extra this weekend. What do you think?
I would think so.
At least one.
It's Wednesday's episode.
No. Next week, we got an awesome guest. We got Cory Doctorow coming on, who was with the EFF for quite a long time. He's with Boing Boing, which is an awesome blog website. And he's also a science fiction writer. So that should be a really awesome guest next week. So we'll have at least one extra episode this weekend at the Ohio Linux Fest. Maybe two. I don't know. I'm not making any promises. But at least one extra one. So if you're going to be in Ohio, you know, definitely go to the Ohio Linux Fest. We're dying to meet you guys. Hang out and party. It sounds like it's going to be a really awesome time. We're going to have our meetup Friday night. Saturday's going to be the conference. Saturday night's going to be the conference party. It sounds like it's going to be an awesome time, and I can't wait, man.
Yeah. What he just said.
This weekend is Get Dan Drunk weekend.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be a problem, because we remember what happened in Boston.
I was going to say,
he'll be drunk somehow at the Waffle House when we get there, you know, freaking 12 noon.
I'll roll into town with a buzz on or something.
Does Ohio have an open liquor container law like some other states or no?
You know, I don't know what this stuff is like. I know when I used to live there that it's not like Pennsylvania where you have to have a state store kind of thing. Like, you can buy liquor in grocery stores and stuff in Ohio. But I'm not entirely sure what the current laws are, if they changed any since I was there. I mean, you know, but when I was here, I was in college, so I was never without liquor. That might have been what ruined me for beer.
Yeah.
You know? It really might be, you know.
Should do some Frapper map shoutouts? They changed Frapper. I really don't care for the way it looks now. I don't know if you guys have taken a look at it. They kind of got rid of the date join thing, and you don't
it's
know.
A pain in the
yeah,
ass.
They changed the layout of it. I'm not crazy about it. But I'm going to guess where we left off last time. If I miss you, shoot us an email, and we'll definitely include you next time. So I'm guessing where we left off last time. We got Ricky Evans from Harrisburg, PA. We got James Tyler from Sunnyvale, California. We've got Phil Ferrari from Alkmaar, Holland. We've got Fred Clausen from Almogordo, New Mexico. We've got Graham from Wales, UK. We've got Jeff Sawyer from San Jose, California. We've got Andrew from Johannesburg, South Africa. Matthew Rendell from Burlington, Ontario, Canada. Scott Boucher from Lawton, Oklahoma. Tosh from Perth, Australia. Jeff Giersa from Lyle, Illinois. And Chad D from Kenosha, Wisconsin. If you're new to the show, please add yourself to the Frapper Mount. We'd like to see where you guys are coming from. The current Frapper Mount shout out is listing is at 784. We're getting close to
1,000.
Got to go over 1,000 at least. We're close. So hopefully we meet some new friends this weekend in Ohio. I'm psyched. It's going to be a good time, man.
We'll go there. There'll be five people that are like, hey, and then everybody else will be like, you guys suck.
There'll be people walking by yelling, Lug Radio!
Go away. All right, I'm going to play us out of here.
Yeah.
See you in Ohio, everybody.
Good night, all.
Yeah. Buddy.
He-Man and Masters of the Universe!
Ich bin Adam, Prinz von Eternia und Verteidiger der Geheimnisse von Schloss Grayskull. Dies ist Gringer, mein furchtloser Freund. Wunderbare Geheimkräfte erschlossen sich mir, als ich eines Tages mein Zauberschwert ausstreckte und sagte, bei der Macht von Grayskull. Ich habe Skeletor. Die Kraft. Wurde zur mächtigen Battlecat und ich wurde He-Man, der mächtigste Mann des Universums. Nur drei andere kennen das Geheimnis. Die
so
Freunde
Sorceress,
Man-at-Arms und Onko. Gemeinsam verteidigen wir die Geheimnisse von Schloss Grayskull vor den bösen Mächten von Skeletor.
Just keep seeing like so this little guy with a mask, with a mustache. You
paint
know?
Your fine ass. Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.